I almost picked up the wrong. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. It's on. It's on. This is what happens when I don't get here in time for mic check. I know. Oh, there we go. We got some. Oh, hello. Good afternoon. I'd like to call this March meeting of the Cambria Community Services District Board to order. Let's start with the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We do have all five members here. Report from closed session, Mr. Carmel.
Thank you, Madam President. No reportable action. We discussed ongoing negotiations with the county for the library building and a process for the general manager's evaluation in June.
Thank you, Mr. Carmel. Agenda review, if it pleases the rest of the board, I'd like to move the presentations up to the beginning, and then we'll have public comment unless there's an objection from the board. Is that all right?
That's fine.
Okay.
Fine with me.
So other than that, is there anything else that people would like to switch around or move on the agenda? Okie doke. Then we will start out, please, with the proclamation to Gail Robinette, followed by the oath of office for the safer firefighter, Aaron Hunt. Gail? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I need you to carry things.
President Rice?
Yes?
I might, too, I think, since we're honoring two different proclamations today, because I think there may be a break following this one. I'd like to welcome the firefighter to your team first, if you would like to do that.
If it's okay with you, I thought we'd start with you. I'd like to honor you.
Well, thank you very much. I'm happy to do whatever. I'm honored to be here, so thank you. Let me get kind of organized here. I thought about some things I wanted to say and share with you.
Let's give a few of the proclamations first.
Good idea. Not that I'm ready to go here.
Some things never change.
Oh, no, they don't.
No.
Thank you.
We've got a proclamation here for you, Gail, and I would like to read it for you. Proclamation honoring Gail Robinette. Whereas Gail Robinette became a full-time resident of Cambria in 2000, and whereas her loyal, dedicated service has enhanced Cambria's beautiful, vibrant community immeasurably, and whereas she is an active, loyal member of the Cambria community, including serving as an active Cambria emergency response team member and coordinating kitchen tours fundraiser for the Fiscalini, Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, and entering her vintage Thunderbird in Cambria's classic car show, and volunteering with homeless animal rescue team, and whereas she served on the first CCSD build-out reduction committee, and whereas she was appointed to the CCSD Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Committee, and as chair shepherded the completion of the California Coastal Trail connection between Moonstone and Park Hill Trails, and whereas she served as a member of the North Coast Advisory Council and serving on the Land Use Committee, and whereas she was appointed to the CCSD Board of Directors in 2011, and whereas she was elected to a four-year term in 2012, and whereas she served as board vice president in 2014 and president in 2015 and 16, and whereas she served as president during the district's efforts to build an emergency water supply project to ensure a reliable water supply even in severe drought. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Cambria Community Services District Board and staff do hereby recognize the valuable community leadership of Gail Robinette.
Thank you.
And we mounted your gavel like a trophy there for you.
It's a long time tradition that we started this year of of retiring the president's gavel. And as the proclamation indicates, Gail was presiding president for 2015 and 2016. We didn't just want to get a regular plaque that you would get from anywhere. So what we did is, as you know, we've been harvesting some lumber off on the ranch and processing that lumber. The benches are made out there, and there's things throughout the community that... So we took this, and we wanted to remember you with a piece of Monterey pine wood that was came from the Fiscalini Ranch. And so with I'm going to put this right here because it's really heavy, but we would like to just thank you, Gail, for everything. And it was a dead and dying tree. I just wanted to make sure that everybody knows that. It wasn't a live tree, so.
You have 3 minutes.
I have 3 minutes. Well, it's interesting. First of all, I want to thank you because I think 3 minutes will be about right because I really thank Amanda for that and all those wonderful memories of some of the great experiences I have shared with so many in this room today, and you didn't miss anything. Makes me tired, but anyway, I had gathered a few comments I thought I would share with you today. I thought it might take, is that right, a couple hours, but I think not. Things I want to share, and really, it has been said so well with my own highlights of my experience, and so I don't think I need to add to that other than I just look around here and I have so many great memories. One I will say again is the connector trail that was mentioned is wonderful. It is a California Coastal Trail link, but the more important thing is it links to the ranch, to the Fiscalini, Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve Bluff Trail. And I did want to acknowledge that trail, too, and how very important it is to all of us, because it's an ADA boardwalk. And that is what I think really we need to honor. The ADA boardwalk that provides access for all to feel free and welcome to just be at peace with nature and enjoy the spectacular environmentally protected property that belongs to Cambria. And so I reflect back. And many of the memories that I have, and I think they did a great job with the proclamation they've touched upon, and many of you know about these things. So I'm going to move then into one other thing that I wanted to share. And that is, I want to talk just a bit and leave you with some brief words of collective wisdom to consider as you work to continue to be proactive problem solvers. I want to leave you with an acronym, HOPE. And this is what HOPE means to me. H is about hearing, but not only hearing others speak and share opinions, but rather it is a time to really listen and to authentically consider another's point of view. This can be hard to do. We tend to be forming rebuttals rather than keeping an open mind. But this can be the start for finding some shared middle ground as we work to solve our future problems together in our community. The O is always going to be for open minds that can lead to divergent thinking, a higher level thinking process that often breaks a mindset, and it leads to effective problem solving. If we allow ourselves to fall angry about things, angry behavior is well known to trigger something called an affective filter, and it clouds us. An affective filter dilutes the potential to be open to others' ideas. And so I encourage that we stay with that. And P in HOPE is practice breathing slowly. It is an amazing, amazing thing that happens. It is calming. It promotes acceptance. It lets you be forgiving of others. And it removes that affective filter that tempts us sometimes to sit in judgment of other folk. It is an amazing practice as you find peace in your own life. Just simple, slow breathing. And E. I see E as evolve. It's what we do together so well in this community. We rise above having closed minds. We reflect on positive choices that are truly, authentically beyond self-interest and will lead us all together to support what is needed as Cambrians today and tomorrow. This is what we do. I do have some special thank yous. I thank everyone here and everyone in our community. There's no doubt about it. But I do have some thank yous that I want to extend now beyond. So let me start by saying you have each been and have my deepest appreciation for all you have done as a community to make my work so very rewarding. You have helped to make Cambria better. We have proacted. We have respected each other. We have worked together to keep the our community secure. Beyond, I would also then like to express special thank you to the following people. I want to thank General Manager Gruber and the entire CSD team. It's a great team. And I want to make sure to include Legal Counsel Tim Carmel and Commander Taylor from the Sheriff's Department as part of the CSD team that serves us, I think, very well. I want to thank you also to the board that I served on. I think we did great things together for the community, and I welcome new Director Farmer here. I think you're carrying on, and I feel very comfortable, and it was a wonderful experience to be with you. I would also like to acknowledge thank you to the Cambrian. You cover so well. You give access. Steve Provost and Kathy Tanner are an invaluable help to these meetings. Thank you very much. And then I would like to thank Carlos Mendoza and the team for all the work they do all the time behind the scenes. They are forever making our meetings ready to go. They always have coffee ready for us. And Carlos and team also serve as the ranch manager. Well, I see you are serious here.
That was 6 minutes.
And we are turning the corner, you can tell. Okay, so thank you. So anyway, back to Carlos, and of course he is the FFRP ranch manager. Thank you also to our AV team, always here and ready to go, and give access to everybody else in the community to see what we're talking about, to see what we're doing, to stay in touch with the work of our public service district. So I thank you for that. And to the many Cambrians who have supported it as a board with key projects, the decisions we have needed to make over the last 5 years have been important. And last, but certainly not least, a very special thanks to the person who is always my listener, my encourager, and my model for fairness, my calming influence, and always my dearest person, Verlinda. And so we are moving towards after our next presentation, we're going to move towards some treats. So we'll be able to kind of visit then. And so I just thank you for the honor today. Thank you very much. Blessed. Thank you so much.
Any board members like to say anything? Director Thompson?
Yeah, I'd just like to thank Gil for the years of service and for at least 12 years of friendship on three different boards, build-out reduction, PROS, and this board. And your service to this community is certainly been tremendous, and I also value your friendship very much, and so thank you very much. You're a dear friend.
Director Berenger.
I'd like to echo that, and I really appreciated when you were vice president, you really kept me in line and got me going, and I really appreciate that. So, and thank you.
Vice President Sanders.
I'd like to echo the sentiments of Mike Thompson. It's been a pleasure working with you, Gail, and it's been a real pleasure being your friend. Thank you.
Thank you. Absolutely my honor.
Thank you very much. Let's quickly go to the, can we administer the oath of office, please? Fire Chief and District Clerk and Aaron Hunt.
Hello, and thank you for letting us be here today. It's my honor to introduce you to Aaron Hunt. He's our newest SAFER firefighter, filling a vacancy that was made by a recent promotion to one of our personnel from engineer. Just a real quick background. Aaron was actually tested number one in this process when we first brought SAFER firefighters on. However, he is an active military reserve with the Air Force, and he had already committed to a series of training with them and has just recently come back to us. So you're going to frequently see his shining face on the engine. So his wife here, Megan, is here today to help pin him and as he's sworn in. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Chief Hollingsworth.
Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
Against all enemies.
Against all enemies.
Foreign and domestic.
Foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith.
That I will bear true faith.
And allegiance.
And allegiance.
To the Constitution of the United States.
To the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation.
Without any mental reservation.
Or purpose of evasion.
Or purpose of evasion.
And that I will.
And that I will.
Well and faithfully.
Well and faithfully.
Discharge the duties.
Discharge the duties.
Upon which I am about to enter.
Upon which I'm about to enter.
Congratulations.
I'd be remiss if I didn't, knowing that there are a few Air Force vets in attendance, I would be remiss if I didn't invite you to participate and join the American Legion.
Absolutely. The two squids and the ground pounder on the board will not hold it against you.
Welcome to the team. We're glad you're here. Would you like to say anything?
I'd just like to thank all of you allowing me to be a firefighter in this community, and I feel like it's a true honor and privilege to be able to serve this community. Thanks to Chief Hollingsworth also for the kind things he said and for his great leadership. Additionally, I'd like to introduce my wife, Megan, here to support me. And then some of you may have heard my four-month daughter in the back, Olivia. So, yeah. And then also my father-in-law here to support me as well. So thank you all for your support. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Can we hear from the ship? Can we? Well, why don't we hear, because we have public comment next, and if we were going to take a little break, is that, I didn't get that memo beforehand, so we have cake. You guys can have some cake. Let's have some cake. 15? Who brought the cake? Organizationally, we got the proclamation put together in time, and the Monterey Pine Forest wood. Are we to take 15-minute break? Okay, it's 4:30, so we will come back at 4:30. 45. Hello? Are we good?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay, thank you. All right, next up on the agenda is public comment. Start off with Karen Dean, followed by Teresa Lees. Thank you. Sorry, that was not.
Am I done already?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
Is this on?
There we go.
Okay. My comments are regarding your performance evaluation of our general manager.
We already had public comment on that. If this is public comment and general public comment, we already held the public comment for the closed session.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. If on the report from closed session, Mr. Carmel?
That's not an agenda item.
Okay. So if these folks would like to speak in general public comment, they can do that, yes? Mr. Carmel? If these folks would like to speak in general public comment?
Absolutely.
Okay. So with that understanding, general public comment? This is general public comment, yes. For items not on the agenda, yes, correct.
Okay, first of all, I would like to say that I think that the general manager is a very nice person, and he's accomplished a lot during his reign as general manager. So what I have to say has got nothing to do with how I feel about him personally. Is the mic on? Okay. In the past couple of months, the focus of much of the public has been on the notice of violations from the Water Quality Control Board and the possible $600,000 in penalties that are hanging over our heads. There's been many calling for his dismissal for his lack of due diligence in following the requirements from the agencies regarding our EWS. There are many who feel that this is just a slap on the hand or a wake-up call to pay attention to what is supposed to be done. Some feel it's no big deal that anyone can make a mistake, the rules are too draconian, or this past accomplishments outweigh this lapse in responsibility. This project was built without the environmental review that normally would have been required prior to being permitted. It was the first of its kind, especially with it using brine and sewage effluent in the process. And this monitoring was important. These testing and reporting requirements were put in place to protect our health and safety, not just of our water supply, but the environment and the other life forms around us. CDM Smith told us in the very beginning this project was going to need up to 4 employees to oversee the running of this project and to keep up with all the testing and reporting involved. We were told by the general manager we could handle it with the staff on hand, and obviously that was not the case. At this point, it appears that may be somewhat resolved with having the engineer's new assistant take over the reporting and the proposed hiring of a full-time plant operator. We've heard many times in the general manager's reports that things are going well. Occasionally there have been problems causing a report here and there to be late, but have we ever heard that over the 2-year period that this notice of violation covers, that we had only 4 out of 33 reports actually done on time? There were reports that were 33, 41, or even 71 days late. That is a big deal when the prospective late fees can be $1,000 a day of the ratepayers' money. The Water Quality Control Board tried to ease the burden by providing software to aid in the reports, cutting out duplications and tests, and reporting and sending reminders before the reports were due. We've heard many reasons why the reports were late, from lab delays and test results, delays in reports from outside sources, to emergencies that have taken priority. I'm sure with adequate communication, the Water Board would have worked with us on those delays due to unforeseen emergencies. And for the rest of the reasons presented, we've had 2 years to try to work this out. The general manager has recently reported that he and our engineer have turned in all the reports that were due and are communicating with the Water Board on a regular basis and are committed to doing better. One has to wonder, though, if it had not been for the diligent oversight and communication with the agency by Ms. Dickinson. Can I finish my sentence? The events of the January CSC meeting and the Come to Jesus meeting with the Water Board that followed, how much longer this trend of delinquent reports and accumulation of penalties would have continued before the Board of Directors and the public became aware of the situation. You want me to stop now?
Yes, please. Thank you. Teresa Lees, thank you for your comments, Ms. Dean.
Thank you very much. I am a voting citizen of Cambria, lived here for 24 years. I want you to have my evaluation of Jerry Gruber to take these points under consideration when you evaluate his job performance. We want accountable and transparent and compassionate leaders. We do not see these traits portrayed by the current manager of the CCSD. Jerry Gruber needs to be terminated on the following grounds. He's not accountable. Jerry Gruber has been negligent on his duties to report information to the CCSD and also to the Regional Quality Control Board. Due to Jerry Gruber's poor management, the CCSD is facing $600,000 in fines because his district staff has chronically filed late reports and failed to comply with water quality regulations. This is according to the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board and other local agencies. As a result, the Water Board slapped Cambria with 3 notices of violations. There's a $1,000 a day fine for late reporting, and the district staff has been late on filing reports 466 days. He is not transparent. Jerry Gruber has not been truthful with us about the EWF or the SWF facility. He's told half-truths and outright lies about improper operating of the brine pond. These have been outlined in letters from the various governmental agencies. There have been egregious violations of water quality regulations and orders to the extent that these pose a serious threat to the integrity of the Water Board's regulatory program and our water quality. Several notices of violation had been issued, and yet Jerry Gruber is not forthcoming in the details of how to amend these violations. He is not to be trusted. These violations have gone on for way too long, needs to be terminated, and he is not compassionate. He has shown total lack of professionalism in dealing with the public, especially members of the public who speak up to question him. He intimidates and berates those in the town who are concerned about the job he is doing. Even the Water Quality Control Board called him on this after he chastised Tina Dickinson. The Water Board condemned Gruber for his treatment of Dickinson. They said, "We do not agree with your representation of our position regarding information we received from Ms. Dickinson and other members of the public, according to the Water Board. We value information and reports that we get from citizens, and we request that you publicly retract your statements. And please do not characterize the Water Board staff in this matter or speak on our behalf. He is not a good manager. The financial situation of the CCSD is in dire straits, and yet he has received a large raise this past year. If you really want to save financial and political standing of the CCSD in this town, then do the right thing and terminate Jerry Gruber."
Thank you, Ms. Lees. Lucia Capitione, sorry I did that, probably horrible. Please pronounce your name properly, followed by Christine Heinrichs.
My name is Dr. Lucia Capicchione.
Capicchione.
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. Capicchione.
My comments are informed by the fact that I have had a career as a Head Start director in 1965 in Watts, Los Angeles, South Central, and East LA. So I know about management. I had 50 employees under my management. And I've also been very active in the community, saving Strawberry Canyon and the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve locally. I'm also a psychologist. And so I won't repeat all of the infringements and inadequacies that were just recited for you about Mr. Gruber's performance here. I have done many performance reviews. I've had to hire people, and I've had to fire them. And when I fired them in Head Start, it was because they were abusing children or they were neglecting the program. And I feel we have cases of abuse and negligence here. It's costing our community a tremendous amount of money. It's costing us the safety of our water, and it is simply not acceptable. The treatment of people in the community by Mr. Gruber has been outrageous more than one time. There's a public event that occurred here that we all know about, but there are a lot of other events that we don't know about that I do. And I feel very strongly that Mr. Gruber needs to be released from his position. And we need to find an employee who works for us, not the other way around. I have hired and fired, and I understand that it's difficult to fire someone. It's been the most difficult thing I ever had to do in my life. But I am encouraging you all on the board. You're working for us. You're managing for us. And you need to have the courage and the integrity to make this decision and to let this person go, because we can't afford him anymore. It's pure and simple. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Christine Heinrichs. That's the last I think I have for public comment.
Thank you. Is this on? I read part of these remarks earlier, but I'll conclude them regarding Mr. Gruber. The Stewart Street water tank is rusted and corroded. A 6-inch water pipe at Lemert is leaking so badly that it has to be manually turned off and on to fill the tank. How much other infrastructure is deteriorating? While this board was putting Cambria into $9 million of principal plus millions in interest of debt for the emergency water facility, everything else was collapsing. If Cambria had replaced aging water pipes, the water saved would have more than satisfied Cambria's needs. These are all water and sewer infrastructure issues that are the purview of Mr. Gruber. His lack of attention to them and failure to meet his obligations on behalf of Cambria have been documented by the Water Board. The emergency water facility is another entire area of concern. His failure to foresee that the evaporation pond was misplaced and would not work, along with its evaporative blowers, cost the district a lot. Other agencies and even the blower manufacturer cautioned against this feature. Now the pond is filled with toxic waste for which the district is responsible for disposal. Mr. Gruber himself stated that disposal will cost at least $1 million. I wish Mr. Gruber no ill, but he has shown his inability to manage the responsibilities of district general manager. His clear failures at this time allow the board to dismiss him for cause, as stated in his contract. A failure to perform his duties in a professional and responsible manner, consistent with generally accepted standards of the profession, and conduct unbecoming the position of general manager, or likely to bring discredit or embarrassment to the CCSD. Terminating his contract for cause relieves the district of being subject to the expensive 9-month severance package. I ask the board to take this opportunity to terminate his employment. Mr. Gruber is being paid a salary of $170,456.48, plus other compensation of $450 a month car allowance plus mileage, $100 per pay period plus $8,522.82 annually for his retirement, totaling over $180,000, plus perks like professional development workshops, 20 days of paid vacation, and 10 days of administrative leave annually. Surely, Cambria can attract a professional person who would value Cambria, live in the community, respect its residents, and serve honorably for that generous compensation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Heinrichs. I don't have any... Are there any other slips? It went on the bottom of my stack. Apologize. Mr. Griffin.
Thank you. My name is Brian Griffin, and I'm a Cambria resident. And I feel like kind of the lone eagle out here. I've listened to everyone saying bad things about Jerry Gruber. But I base my decisions about CCSD, whether I'm able to turn my faucet on and get water out of it, whether the pine forest is burning or not, and whether I have a supply of safe firefighting water. And all those things seem to be working real well, and I'm doing it at a reasonable cost. I was inspired by the board and by Mr. Gruber to start conserving water in this community. And my last CCSD bill, my wife and I just used 2 units of water. So we're conservationists and environmentalists, and we don't like to see things wasted. I know that since Jerry's been on board, any time I've wanted to talk to him, he's been open to talk to me and discuss the issues, and we weren't always in complete agreement on everything, but the things that we talked about, he was always listening to me, and everything seemed to be okay. I don't think it does any good to continually criticize everything. Even Noah got a call from God about the floods that were coming, and he had a chance to fix things before it happened. We had a very, very wet year this year when a lot of these things came to light that we got some problems over. But I know that Jerry's been trying to do an awful lot of work with not too many people, and that may be part of the problem. Maybe if we're willing to pay for a few more staff people to be on board to help him do his job, things would be better. But as far as that goes, I think he's been doing a great job, and I appreciate all the work that the board does also, every one of you.
Thank you, Mr. Griffin. I'd just like to speak very briefly to the, since it was brought up in the public comment, I just want to make it clear, the board did meet in closed session. We talked about the process of doing the general manager's evaluation, and we will be moving forward on that. There is no action that's been taken so far. We just were getting through the how we were going to do the process of evaluating him. On the notices of violation, I have the greatest confidence that Mr. Gruber and his staff have been communicating. I've seen the emails every single day with the Regional Water Quality Control Board. And as a Cambrian, it means a lot to me that those notices of violation could cost this community money. It also means a lot to me that there was absolutely not a single one of those reports that showed there was any risk to the health and safety of this community. If I need to say that again, I will. There was no risk in any of those monitoring. I talked to the staff of the Regional Water Quality Control Board and asked them. This is late reports. It's getting corrected. There is a process in place to be evaluating the general manager. And at this time, this general manager is here, and he's fixing the things that were done incorrectly. He made an apology at the last meeting. And until I see something differently, this is a different general manager than we had 4 months ago. I hope it sticks around, and I hope we continue to get the good service that we've been getting, and we're going to move forward from here.
Madam President, may I add just one comment? The term toxic waste was tossed out. I think you'll find that there's a disagreement about that. I don't think you can characterize the water in the pond as toxic waste. And reference was made to $1 million to dispose of the water in the pond. I don't know where that came from. I think that's a gross overstatement.
All right, let's move on. Special reports. The Sheriff's Department report. Did we run you off yet? Oh, good. Welcome.
Good afternoon. I am obviously not Commander Taylor. My name is Dave Haydock. I'm a senior deputy with the Sheriff's Department out of the Los Osos Station. And one of the interesting things about my job is that things happen in a split seconds. For example, today, I was told about 20 minutes before this meeting that I'm going to be here.
Did you know you were going to get cake?
I have a rule about eating sweets in uniform, so I avoided it, which was hard to do. But anyhow, I have some stats for you that were provided to me by Commander Taylor. And the period covers February 23rd to March 23rd. For the Cambria area, we received 208 calls for service in Cambria, and some of those calls included 19 traffic stops that deputies made on vehicles, 8 pedestrian contacts, 5 foot patrols in the downtown Cambria area, 11 alarm calls that were related to the recent storms, 6 of those were for businesses, and 5 were from residences. Of those alarm calls, all of them were unfounded, were just related to the storm. 2 incomplete 911 calls, which required deputies to respond and check the residences, again, unfounded, which was good. Some disturbance of the peace calls, these ranged from loud, intoxicated tourist to a woman who refused to pay for a taxi cab with a fare of $875 when she rented it from Los Angeles to Cambria. She actually eventually did pay the fee, though, when deputies arrived. We had one burglary on St. Patrick's Day where deputies investigated a burglary in the 200 block of Castle Street where the victim reported that a theft of 5 rugs were taken. And there were no signs of forced entry to the residence, and at this point, no suspects. Also, during the past month, we had 7 arrests in Cambria. 2 of those were for drunk in public. 1 was a domestic violence case. Another was for a probation violation. Somebody was arrested for warrants, lying to a police officer, and 1 DUI arrest by the Sheriff's Department. Phone scams continue to be on the rise. That's a common thing, but happy to report that of the complaints that came in from Cambria resulting from phone scams, people are just hanging up and nobody's out of any money right now, so that's good. The kind of the hot topic ones right now are obviously the IRS and PG&E calling saying that they're going to turn off power immediately unless you pay over the phone, which obviously they would never do. Current staffing as of March 15th for the Sheriff's Co-Station out of Los Osos, which serves Cambria. We currently have 1 commander, 2 sergeants, 20 deputies assigned to patrol. One of those, unfortunately, is out due to a work-related injury. 1 school resource officer, 1 rural crimes officer, and we also have a deputy going through the field training program who should be complete in about 4 weeks. And that is all the stats I have.
Director Thompson.
Yes, thank you. I'm glad to hear that we don't have a crime wave going on in Cambria here. It's heartening. I did hear that Commander Taylor will be transferring out of Coast Station and that his replacement will be our very own Jim Vogue, who I think a lot of you know. Maybe you don't know yet, but
So that is the rumor.
That's the rumor.
That being said, nothing's actually been printed by the sheriff yet. How's that for a political answer?
You have a career ahead of you, apparently. Anybody else have any questions? Okay. Thank you very much for coming today. All right. Next up, we have a report from PROS Chairperson Steve Niffen. PROS is one of our standing committees.
Yeah, Madam Chairman and the board, thanks for having me here. I'm going to keep my remarks short because Brian Morgan is here from the FFRP to give you an update on the trails, which I think you will find most interesting and to the largest constituency out here of what's actually going on the trails on the ranch. So I won't bog you down with my dissertation on the role of play in the culture and the lack of it in the children that we're raising now and the importance still of building a park. We're in the bid process right now. I won't belabor the group with what's going on, but we're slowly pushing this ball forward on making the park happen over at the rodeo grounds. My phone number, I have a new cell phone, is 858-8252. If you want to call me and talk to me at length about any of that, anybody can do that because I love talking on the phone. It makes me feel important. So that's one thing. But a couple of things to the board that I'm going to say again. I really want to wrap my head around the cost of what it takes to run the ranch every year. We don't have a finite number on that. Someday that will happen, I'm sure, because we just cut 15 trees down on the center trail. And if you know how much it costs to cut a tree down, you can only extrapolate what it must cost to run this ranch. And that being said, I want to also mention the 58 vacant lots that we're taking in, and somehow we're going to have to start dealing with that at some level cost-wise. I know we're all shaking our heads, but somehow that's in our bailiwick of things that we're working on at some level. We're not having a lot of hope with that. But I also want to extol the virtues of the FFRP. If you want to participate in that ranch and you want to make decisions on it and you have something to say, the FFRP is wide open. They're accepting. They hold their own meetings, and they are doing a fabulous job managing a resource that, quite frankly, we don't have the resource to manage ourselves. So they're doing a great job. If you want to get involved, if you got complaints, call them. Get involved and complain from the inside. Don't complain from the outside. That being said, I want to introduce Brian Morgan, who's working on the trails, and his presentation you should find interesting. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve, for your report.
Well, thank you, Stephen, very much, but I was under the impression I was talking about invasive plant removal, not trails. But we'll give it our best. I want to thank the Board of Directors and PROS for having FFRP Trails Management Group here. I have a tendency to ramble quite a bit, so watch your clock. Put me on 3 minutes, please. I did bring some notes, and I'm going to be right on target with the notes. My name is Brian Morgan. I have a partner in crime, Mark Larson, who is we're both board members for FFRP, and we jointly share the Trails Management Committee. We work very, very closely with Carlos Mendoza and CSD crew. We have actually formed a partnership with them. The partnership is to do a number of things you'll hear about, but right now, emergency rain and erosion-related trail projects, this is where we have a very real sense of urgency working as a team. We've had 5 years of drought, then followed by very, very heavy rains. It taught us a lot about the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve trail system. Many of our trails have become washed out streams. If you're on the ranch, you've seen this. You've seen a lot of trail closures. Washed out streams, pools, several of our trails are inundated by muddy water from wetlands and seasonal streams. Carlos Mendoza and CSD crew have closed several trails as unsafe and impassable. We found that many ranch trails are simply not sustainable in their current configurations. But they couldn't be because most of them were actually planned by cattle and ranch equipment. They were not built to be sustainable trails. A number of years ago, we had some of the founders of FFRP, along with ranch managers, develop a good trail system. But there's much, much more work to do. With that in mind, all is not lost. The Friends of Fiscalini Ranch Preserve and Carlos Mendoza and CSD crew have formed a team to identify and solve current emergency tasks. They include temporarily closing erosion-affected trails, removing hazardous and downed trees from trail areas. Stephen just mentioned that. Moving standing water off trails, installing approved compacted base material to build up eroded trails, installing compacted wood chips, which initially I didn't like very much, but I think the general consensus from the group is the wood chip forest trails work, even for runners and bikers. Some of our better current trails were, this is an ongoing series of projects, some completed and some are underway. It's a major task. Future projects, CSD and FFRP team, not only addressing immediate safety concerns on the ranch, but we're developing short and long-term strategies and goals. FFRP Trails Committee, Mark Larson, is in contact with several geo-mapping companies to develop a comprehensive map of all ranch trails. This will allow the rating of trails from poor, which need to be abandoned and rehabilitated, to good, which require minor cosmetic surgery for the most part. We'll also be able to develop hiker-friendly map brochures and upload an improved and current trails map to a Google-type site and have available on the FFRP website, the CCSD website, Chamber of Commerce websites, and anyone else who's interested in that. The team will be reviewing each trail to determine methods of improving or eliminating. The team will be developing sustainable replacement trails for the poor up and downhill trails, which will be abandoned, rehabilitated to a natural state. The team will be designing and installing approved trail identification signs. Initially, the signs are going to be installed in the forest. These are not neon signs. These are simple 4x4 posts with, you see them for the most part in USGS forest areas where it's very simple, but it tells people who are a bit lost the way out and where they're going to. This actually is going to be developed within the next 30 days. The team, and this is a very important part, the team will develop a plan to clean up the historic Fiscalini building sites on the ranch, leaving them in a state of arrested decay, much like the Bodie ghost town in the White Mountains. So what they are now is what they will be, but they will be cleaned up, they will have educational signage, and they'll have limited trail systems to allow the visitors, our hikers, to see the rich history of the Fiscalini Ranch. FFRP Trails Group is building a team of trail volunteers who will operate as goodwill ambassadors to the public. They'll be versed in proper trail design and maintenance, trail etiquette, current trail locations and destinations, flora and fauna, history of the Fiscalini Ranch and Cambria from Native American habitation to current. Now, the trails group is somewhere kind of this flexible 8 to 12 people. Of those 8 to 12 people, four are already doing that as FFRP docents. So we're well underway in getting this thing established. Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve Trails Group is in almost daily contact with Carlos Mendoza, our ranch manager, to assure positive communication concerning the health of the Ranch Preserve Trail System. In our opinion, the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve is the jewel of the Central Coast. We think that there is nothing that comes even close to what we have here. Does it need improvement? Certainly right now with the amount of rainfall we've had, it needs significant improvement and ongoing improvement. But it is a wonder to go out on that ranch currently and spend some time and walk the trails and see that spring is coming. And we are going to have a spring filled with invasive plants. But we're going to have a spring that's filled with wonderful native plants as well. So it's if you haven't been out there, come on out and take a look. Run into one of us running, pulling weeds or working on trails or leading docent walks and ask some questions about the ranch. We pride ourselves in some pretty good knowledge. So come on out. Join us. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
President Rice?
Yes. Director Thompson?
Yes, I think that certainly Brian and Steve have really kind of captured the essence of what the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve do for this community. They're not paid. They're volunteers. And they joined together with a paid CCSD staff member, Carlos Mendoza, to really make sure that that ranch remains the jewel of this community, and we thank you for your service.
Joellen, did you want to give us, before we move on to the next presentation? Ms. Joellen Butler.
Joellen Butler, Executive Director for FFRP, and I was going to say a lot more, but I don't think I'm going to. That was plenty. I do want to thank Brian and Steve and Carlos and the CCSD board and general manager all for your support. And I just kind of want to give you FFRP's goals for the year. We had our annual meeting in January and came up with these goals. And the goals are, number one, to actively enforce the conservation easement and support CCSD with the management of the ranch. Number two, execute a conservation and restoration program that concentrates on forest health. Number three, create an organizational structure of working committees that can function over the long term with changes in personnel. Number four, increase the number and involvement of supporting members of FFRP and increase participation of FFRP board and volunteers on the committees. I do want to put in a plug for our 12th annual wildflower show, which will be in this very building. There will be hundreds, probably around 500, bouquets of wildflowers, a lot of them in really amazing vases, covering this building, and it'll be transformed on Friday the 28th and open for the public on Saturday, April 29th, and Sunday, April 30th. And this year we'll have a wildflower photo contest that's judged by the public. And at the end of that contest and at the end of the event, we'll show those photographs in the office of FFRP. I do want to give you contact information to get involved, if you'd like to be involved, or to ask us questions, or to call and tell us things you see going on the ranch. You guys, the community is our eyes and ears out there. And our office is located at 604D Main Street next to Sandy's Deli. We're open Thursday and Friday, 11 till 2 p.m., Saturday, 11 to 3 p.m., and we need volunteers to expand those hours. So it would be nice to be open every day of the week. Right now, we have a photo show of mushrooms on the ranch by Eileen Rogers. Our phone number is 805-927-2856. Our website is ffrpcambria.org, and we'd love to hear from you. Thank you.
Thank you, Joellen. Anybody have any questions? All right, we've got one more presentation. This is from the Build-Out Reduction Program Citizens Committee, Ted Siegler, chairperson. You get 3-4 minutes. How many minutes do you need? Did you have a piece of cake? Okay, you can have six. I don't know. Is the light on?
Is it on now? Okay. I am going to use a question and answer format. So starting out, what is the Build-Out Reduction Program and why are we addressing it? The Build-Out Reduction Program, or BRP, was originally adopted as part of the 2008 Water Master Plan. The Water Master Plan Environmental Impact Report addressed the growth-inducing impacts of expanding Cambria's water supply by setting a limit of 4,650 residential connections. That leaves a substantial number of properties in town that will not receive water and sewer services. The BRP was established to address potential concerns of property owners who will not be served, that their property rights have been impaired. That's a matter ultimately for the courts and beyond the scope of the BRP, but it does represent a risk to the community. The BRP is set up to address the risk. But in general, the committee's also focused on a more positive outcome of the BRP. Quoting from the 2006 brochure, I'll say, without careful planning, the things that make Cambria special will be gone forever, and it will become like so many other faceless towns, congested with traffic, devoid of open space, and burdened with the high cost of additional infrastructure. The Cambria Community Services District is proud to present an innovative build-out reduction plan to ensure Cambria's small-town character, natural resources, and quality of life remain intact. This program is an opportunity for our community to acquire vacant properties that will provide open space, park lands, and breaks between developed properties, preserve pine forest, and more. Seizing this opportunity will have a cost, but the benefit cannot be adequately measured. So, what's the nature of the Citizens Committee? About a year ago,
the CCSD board established the Build-Out Reduction Program Citizens Committee to review and revise the existing BRP. The committee consists of 10 members representing a variety of viewpoints, and our work has been carried out in an environment of collaboration and mutual respect. When we started out, no one on the committee or on the CCSD board would have expected that we'd still be working a year later. However, as a group, we're dedicated to making concrete, practical recommendations that can and will be implemented once the SWF's regular operating permit is obtained. What was the result of the committee's review of the existing plan? After reviewing it, the committee observed a number of issues. First, even though the original BRP has not been fully implemented, progress has been made toward the goal. Properties have been acquired through transfer of development credits program, and there's been a significant lot merger activity. The BRP originally focused on what it termed buildable lots. Our checks with the county planning department led us to the conclusion that there really is no useful definition of a buildable lot. We chose instead to focus on undeveloped parcels as defined by APNs or assessor's parcel numbers. And then finally, half the original BRP was to be funded by water connection fees and increased water rates. Unfortunately, these fees and rates can only be used to provide water service and not to purchase property. The other half was to be financed through the effective sale of new water positions. We haven't been able to determine whether this could be done within all of the state's legal frameworks, but there is uncertainty about the price of any potential sales, the timing, and the political fallout. As a result, we've adopted a fresh approach that builds on what has already been working in large part, and this is why the committee is still hard at work. What has the committee achieved so far? To date, the committee's refreshed the baseline data. We've verified that the number of actual residential water connections plus various commitments, including the wait list, falls within the 4,650 cap. We've done an extensive analysis of undeveloped properties. This analysis concludes that there are approximately 1,500 parcels that have not been developed and are therefore eligible for acquisition through the BRP. The 1,500 parcels comprise about 7.5 million square feet or 170 acres. What work is in process? We're in the late stages of sorting through alternatives for financing property acquisition and considering how best to structure the community to perform the acquisition and ultimately, as Steve Niffen pointed out, maintain the properties to be acquired. One of the committee's principles is that there are at least three groups of stakeholders that will benefit from a successful BRP implementation. These groups are property owners who will be able to develop once the SWF is permitted, Cambria's current residents, and tourists. Our approach is to consider primary sources of financing that derives from these groups. One source of financing under consideration is formation of a Mala-Roos Community Facilities District. That would include the property owners on the water wait list. A second potential source would be a property tax levied against the developed parcels in Cambria. Each of these actions would require a two-thirds majority approval of the relevant constituencies. So it's a pretty high bar. The third primary source of financing could be a fee paid for lodging. This would likely require adoption by the county supervisors or creation of a special tourism district or something, and that's a lot. There's a lot of question about it right now. Because taxes and fees are complex topics, particularly in California, and because they require the goodwill of voters, passage is not certain, but we believe the potential community benefits are compelling, and our report will present a strong case for passage. In addition to the primary financing vehicles, we're contemplating a number of secondary sources, including the TDC program, grants, a number of voluntary actions such as lot mergers, acquisition by neighbors, donation, deed restrictions, easements, etc., that property owners might find to their benefit. We're also exploring various organizational structures to acquire and maintain undeveloped properties. These include the CCSD, a potential open space district, a county service area, use of private organizations like the Land Conservancy, and hybrid combinations. Finally, the other area we're working on is approximate value of the property to be retired, and we've contacted an appraiser and local real estate agents to help with that process. The work in process is exactly that. Please don't assume that anything has been set in concrete or approved by the committee, and where I've been explicit, it's my opinion of where we're headed, but it's my opinion. So what are the next steps? We've begun drafting parts of our report. As we come to conclusions, the various pieces will be folded into the report. At this point, we're drawing toward conclusions rather than posing new questions. So that gives you, I hope, a little assurance that things are converging on finality. And I want to point out that our report will be different than the earlier report. Most likely, we will roughly size the cost of the BRP and identify sources of financing with recommended dollar amounts, but we will not attempt to reach a conclusion that the stream of financing will match the cost of the BRP. There's too many unknowns to make that meaningful, including real estate values, changes in those values over time, the number of property owners who will actually decide to participate in the BRP, contributions of secondary sources of financing, cost of maintenance, cost of administration, et cetera. What we can assure is that the recommended flow of funds for a period of approximately 25 years will retire a substantial amount of the undeveloped property in Cambria. And then some final words. I'd like to thank Allison Groves, Bob Sfarzo, Cindy Steidel, Crosby Swartz, Greg Hunter, Jerry McKinnon, Laura Swartz, Mark Rochefort, and Mel McCulloch for being such a great committee. You can see us in action at the fire station on Monday mornings every 2 or 3 weeks at 10 o'clock. And the schedule is posted on the website, and we'd love to have more public participation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Siegler. Do you have a question, Vice President Sanders?
Just a comment. Ted, to you and the committee, many thanks. This is an incredibly complex task. There are many, many moving parts, and it's just remarkable the depth to which you have gone to ferret out all of the information that's necessary to come to the decisions that you're going to be making, and the incredible, extraordinary amount of time you put into this. Much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you.
Excuse me, President Rice.
Yes.
I'd like to make a couple
Director
comments, please.
Farmer.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Siegler, I appreciate your very, I guess you could say, comprehensive recitation of what the BRP is all about. Early on, I think you alluded to this as being part of the vision of the Buildout Reduction Program, and that was to, these were your words, I wrote them down, ensure the character and quality of the life of our community will continue. And I certainly hope that that is the end result of all the works that you do. Thank you. I also want to comment on Executive Director Joellen Butler said earlier about the Fiscalini Ranch, as well as Brian Morgan. And I believe it was 25 years ago, it was either in February or March of 1992, when a group of us got together up at the late Walt Sterling's house and talked about, saving the ranch, the Fiscalini Ranch, which was at that time called the East-West Ranch, saving it from development. And the hard work of over an 8-year period ultimately led to the purchase of the ranch and what we have today. So I just wanted, for those of you that maybe weren't around back then, it was a very contentious issue, private property rights versus what we would hope for as what would become the jewel of the Central Coast. And thankfully, we do have the ranch out there for both tourists and locals to enjoy. So I just wanted to plug in that kind of anniversary. Thank you.
And I just wanted to clarify with the board the purposes for the BRP committee, which we thought was not going to last as long as it has, because when we originally approved folks onto the committee and created it, we thought it was going to be a 60 to 90 day process. Clearly, we were underestimating the amount of time and complexity involved. But and I heard a couple of things that I just want to make sure that the board the rest of us are all clear on, that we're looking at how do we fund acquisition and then also long-term maintenance, because the maintenance of these properties is an issue. But is the maintenance a part of the BRP program is kind of one of the questions. The BRP is mainly to retire lots, I believe. I'm saying we do need funding for maintenance of these lots, as Mr. Niffen mentioned with the 58 that we just recently acquired. We do need to be planning for this, but I want to make sure that the other thing is staffing levels. We did direct the staff to make sure that they have the staffing that they need, whether it's taking minutes or getting information on different financing options. I want to make sure that they have the resources that they need to do the job. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. Anybody have any particular?
Madam President, before I make a comment on that particular thing, I just want to reiterate the value that we have here in the PROS Commission and FFRP and the Build-Out Reduction Committee. We certainly should get a report quarterly, and I think a lot of our audiences haven't heard this before, and it's great that we've done that. That said, and to your point on the Build-Out Reduction Committee, I think that is key if not a final report, certainly a final draft type report to coincide with our application and and goes along with the EIR. And I think that's important. And if they have a suggestion on how to pay for maintenance, that's one thing. But one thing that will be critical is to show that we have a workable, even though it might not be in place, mm-hmm. a workable plan in order to mitigate as one citizen said, supplemental water supply that we might have. So that's my input.
Any other directors? Okay, sounds like then we are on target on that, because nobody has any objections. So the main focus is going to be funding mechanisms and for not just acquisition but also maintenance. Is that what I'm hearing? I just want to make sure that we're clear.
And I don't think the maintenance is something that's going to be part of the cost of the community and part of the mitigation that'll have to be addressed.
I agree. It needs to be. I mean, that's what I'm trying to get a consensus here that they're on the right track is kind of where I'm trying to make sure we're clear. All right. Then we are set to go. Oh, we already did number four, acknowledgments and presentations. I have a quick question. We do have folks here relating to the local hazard mitigation plan. I don't know. I don't want to lower the priority of staff, but maybe we could move that up.
You can do whatever you want, Madam President.
Only if I have consensus from
I'd
the board,
that.
If that's all right.
I would support that.
If you want, and if you want to just accept my general manager report, or if you want me to give a detail, I'd be more than happy to.
Well, how about we do the LHMP and see
absolutely.
Where we are? Absolutely. I think it's valuable for the community to hear from you about what you're doing, not just from reading in the binder, but let's skip to the LHMP.
I have more pictures, too. I've brought back pictures. I'm pretty excited about those pictures.
Yeah.
I know Michael is. Michael. In the back there, and
if
fine,
we might,
Madam
then
President.
We'll go to the
absolutely.
We'll go to and we'll come back to consent and the staff reports and the committee reports if that's
sure.
not objectionable. Okay.
Sure.
All right. So number 7A under regular business, discussion and consideration of adoption of resolution 11/2017 adopting the local hazard mitigation plan. It looks like we have a presentation.
presentation. Yes? Yeah, can you hang on just one sec?
Yeah,
we got to introduce the item and Vice President Sanders.
Just a suggestion. I believe there may be a motion to continue this and to consider bringing another public agency into the process. And so rather than hear the report as it's currently written, perhaps it would make sense to postpone this until we find out whether or not the other public agency is going to join in.
I'm familiar what you're talking about, and I think that the area of coverage and the activity of the other agency may not blend. This is also important that we adopt this as relatively expeditiously. I think we have the right people here to give that presentation, and an addendum, if required, to the LHMP might add that other agency, and that's kind of the direction I would be going as far as the resources that we have available, the amount of material that's already been created, and it also would require an additional cost, and that other agency would likely want to fund that if they want to be involved. So that's my thought.
I would like to hear from the general manager, and I think I would like to hear the report, even if we end up continuing. I think there's a lot of, yeah.
Yes, Madam President, may I introduce it? Item 7A is discussion and consideration of adoption of Resolution 11-2017, adopting the local hazard mitigation plan. I think what the board's referring to is there's been a process, and it's been a lengthy process, and we had a community meeting to receive input before this item was brought to the CCSD Board of Directors, and there were several comments made regarding the healthcare district and why they weren't incorporated into the process. I've talked to Bob Newman. It doesn't seem to be problematic to do that. If a disaster does hit, the stipulation is that you have to have a plan in process, and or it doesn't necessarily have to be adopted. And so that's where we are with it. I think there was a consensus, one board member who was at the meeting indicated that the possibility of incorporating the healthcare district into the LHMP would be a good idea. We work closely with the health district on many different issues. So with that, I just wanted to give a little brief history to that. And that's really what sparked the conversation was the result of that public meeting. And that's part of the process. The public meeting is to be able to solicit input from people. So thank you.
Director Thompson.
Yes, I believe I was that person that that made that comment that Mr. Gruber alluded to. In discussing with some of the members of the health district, they had indicated to me that they certainly did want to be participants in this. I would make one correction to the staff report. My understanding is that in the staff report it says 100% of the development was grant funded. I believe we kicked in about $9,000 to the cost.
That is correct.
Yeah, and I think again, it makes total sense to have the health district be included in this project. We invited them to join in with us at the meetings and so forth. And Supervisor Bianchi was who chairs the Fire Safe Focus Group. I think also supported having that participation. So. It doesn't make sense to have two LHMPs, and we might as well have one from this community, even though the jurisdictional lines do not necessarily coincide entirely. And so I would certainly, I'd like to hear the presentation or some of the presentation, but I think it makes sense that we put this off for a month and allow the health district to determine if they want to participate and what the cost of that participation is, and then bring it back and have one project from this community.
Can you give an abbreviated so that the community has a little bit of a sense of what we're even discussing?
How about I just tell you our thoughts on the healthcare district becoming part of the process? It really makes
Can you just give a little brief of what the LHMP, the Local Hazard Mitigation Plan, even is? Just a quick synopsis so the public has a sense of what we're talking about.
The Hazard Mitigation Plan is to reduce the community's vulnerability to naturally occurring hazards and disrupt the disaster cycle of disaster damage, reconstruction, and then repeat damage. So we've been working with the community and technical experts, and we've had a hazard mitigation planning group and four members of your staff, and we've come up with mitigation goals, objectives, and actions to help reduce the jurisdiction's vulnerability. And we've had a chance, a big component of this plan is to involve the community. So in addition to sharing our work with the planning group, we have also held a notice public forum here. And we had a chance to hear back from the community. We had about 35 comments. Most of them were quite positive. As you know, Community of Cambria's residents are very knowledgeable about the natural hazards that impact their jurisdiction and also are very supportive of mitigation efforts to make their community and its residents safer. With respect to the healthcare district, we do believe it makes good sense to add the healthcare district to this plan. But it wouldn't be as an addendum. We would actually need to include a public health component to the plan. And there's about 10 steps that we would need to take in order to make this happen. And it would probably be about a three-month process. But we have done this many times before, and we are willing to do it if the healthcare district approves the funding for it and you're all in agreement with it.
Thank you. That was a very, very good and very nice brief synopsis, so we have a little bit better idea of what we're talking about. I have a few public comments, but does anybody have questions?
Yes, I just wanted to reiterate the fact that because we are in process with this LHMP, if there should be some sort of situation that requires us to have approval from FEMA or to submit applications to FEMA, we would qualify because we are in process. And that's my understanding from Mr. Topping and from others that we're good to go now. So the 3 months would not put us in any kind of jeopardy of
what we would need to do to answer that question is after we've taken all the steps to restructure the plan into a multi-jurisdictional plan and we've come up with new mitigation actions for the district and wrote the public health section, we would need to take it to the district board for their approval. We would need to hold another notice public forum. Then we would need to come back here and get your approval. And at that point, we would send it to the State Hazard Mitigation Office at California Office of Emergency Services. And after that, after receiving their approval, then we would send it to FEMA.
Right. But because we are in process, we're covered.
We can send it to FEMA a few months later if that's what you're referring to, yes.
Right. I mean, if we should require FEMA assistance, we are covered because we have this process going on.
That is correct. Yes.
Madam President, Shirley Bianchi from the Healthcare District Trustee is here, and if it's okay with you.
Got to slip with her. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, before public or during public comment, but I think she might be able to shed some light on the situation also and obviously throw her support in behind the process.
Ms. Bianchi.
Yeah, well, this puts me in a pickle because I am not the chairman of the healthcare district. You know, so this would be my personal opinion. My personal opinion is that, you know, I would certainly like to have the healthcare district involved. But it would have to come back to our district board and for public discussion, you know, the whole schmear, which does take time. So that really is all I can comment from the healthcare district. You know, I can comment from the Fire Safe Focus Group, which I was going to do anyway.
Please do.
We're very, very supportive of this LHMP. One comment I would like to make is because from where I live, I cannot believe the exuberance of all of the vegetation in the rural areas after 5 years of drought. The sensation I had today on the way down was drive really fast before all of this stuff grows over the top of you and you can't get out. And my point in being humorous is there's going to be a really high fire danger. I have not seen the grass this high in I don't know how long. That's my comment from the Cambria Fire Safe Focus Group. And I'm just the moderator. I'm not the president or chairman. I'm just moderator. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Bianchi. Okay, Ken Topping, followed by Christine Heinrichs.
Hi, everybody. I don't do this very often anymore. I'm here to applaud the draft LHMP as a fundamentally sound guide to improving community resilience and reducing disaster losses in the long run. The consultant has done a good job. With a few tweaks, it'll be almost perfect. There are two aspects that do call for some time. One is the one you've already discussed, and that is the question is, could it be a better plan if it were multi-jurisdictional and included the Cambria Community Healthcare District? And I think to resolve that, you're going to have some perhaps informal discussion with the stakeholders between the two entities, staff and or selected board members, to determine the commitment of the community healthcare district. And that, I think, is the key to the answer on whether the extra 3 months is important to do or not. But also, while you're in that process, I'd encourage you to look carefully at the priorities that are identified in here, particularly the seismic evaluation, structural evaluation of key facilities like the Vets Hall, water and wastewater facilities, and the like, and particularly the fire station, for example. It's a new facility, but you want to make sure that you've got a good handle on what the risk levels and hazard levels are that should be addressed and in what order. That's, I think, is where the plan is least clear at this time, and I think I would encourage you board members to look at those priorities carefully to see if it makes sense from a practical standpoint. And so full speed ahead as rapidly as possible, and I encourage you to adopt this when it comes back to you, whether it's with the blessing of the healthcare district or not. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Topping. Christine Heinrichs. And then we'll bring it back to the board unless there's somebody else that didn't turn in a slip. Is Christine still here? Oh, she did. Okay. Then unless there's anybody else that would like to comment, bring it back to the board for action. Yes.
I'm Claudia Harmon-Worthen, and when I was looking at the document, there is one mistake that I saw. Fiscalini Ranch was not originally called the East-West Ranch. Actually, it was the Fiscalini Ranch, but so I think that should be, and there's a couple of typos, but that'll get fixed later. But 3.2H, page 118, and 3.2E, page 106, they want to increase the water storage for fire, domestic consumption, and that's for growth, and I'm not in favor of that. 3.2H, share the water with San Simeon, a pipeline. That makes me very nervous because it sure looks like a desal pipeline. Also, we're going to be giving them 25% of the water. I think that's what I understood, like 75-25 split. And I think that's a concern. And I I don't think that we should be paying to give them water. And so anyway, that's in the document on 3.2H. And then also the levying of taxes on page 100 with special assessments. It makes me nervous because of special assessments, you can't do a Prop 218. And it also says that most of the people in the community support the document, and I don't think that's especially true. I surely don't, the way it's written. And I'm hoping that when you look at it in the next 3 months, if that's what you decide to do, that you will look at some of these issues and take some of the things out that are really not pertinent to a hazard mitigation plan, because some of these things you have in there are not. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, bringing it back to the board for discussion or a motion. Oh, don't everybody jump at once.
I would move that that we table this item and request that staff determine from the health district their interest in participating, and we bring it back to this board when we have that determination.
Second the motion.
Just a clarifying question. Do you want to have the committee look be part of that process, or you want to just have them staff on staff and then have bring it back to the board once they've decided whether to include the healthcare district? I just want to be clear about what we're doing.
Okay. There were some other minor issues that Mr. Topping indicated need to be clarified, and so I think at this point in time, it should be a staff discussion with the staff of the consultant, and then to determine if the health, if those things are clarified and we can bring it back in a month, great. If the health district is going to participate, we understand that it's going to take 3 months, and so it really depends upon what that discussion between staffs.
So right now we're just determining whether or not we'll fold them into the process, and then after that we'll take further action?
Correct.
Okay. Does everyone understand the... Mm-hmm. Monique, did you get the motion? Can you read it back, please?
The motion is to table this item and request staff to determine from...
Is your microphone on?
Yes, the light is on.
The light is on, but nobody's home. We just want to be able to hear you because you're telling us the motion again. Thank
you. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me on this one?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. The motion was to table this item and request staff determine from the CCHD their interest in participating and bring it back to the CCSD board after the determination is identified.
Thank you. Let's call the roll, please.
Cool.
Call the roll, please.
Director Thompson?
Aye.
Vice President Sanders?
Yes.
Director Berenger?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
President Rice?
Aye. Thank you. That passes unanimously. Thank you, everybody, for the rearranging there. Let's get back on target with the general manager's report.
Thank you, Madam President. I'll be brief, but I will go into a little bit of detail. I was asked by the board.
Do you want me to turn on the timer?
Yes, you can if you want. I was asked to bring back every month a status on the drought. My report last month was that. The Central Coast is now in a moderate level. From our standpoint, usage is pretty much in line than where it was last billing cycle. Our WBE well is well above 3 feet, and our wells in the San Simeon and Santa Rosa aquifers are full. We anticipate getting some more rain this Friday and Saturday. And the long-term forecast looks like it. We could get some more in April, but we're going to start seeing my notes here trends in tapering off. We've got
about 34 inches here in Cambria, so that's my update on the drought. And there'll be another discussion item later on regarding stage three. So the county did declare an emergency through the state of California for the floods that we experienced. We have been working with county staff, and we have submitted are in the process of submitting a detailed summary of the expenses that we incurred directly related to the rains, and it is pretty substantial. So we have a list of those things, and that would be for a 75% reimbursement. We don't want this to slip away. We want to be able to make sure that once we submit all the paperwork, they review it, and they determine if the things that we're asking for or that we're eligible for will be reimbursed for it. The update on the wastewater treatment facility, I have a couple slides at the end of my presentation, and we'll go over those. Update on the meeting with various ad hoc committees throughout the month. Really appreciate the board. They continue to meet with different ad hoc committees with staff. The brine disposal, we do have an agreement with South County Sanitation District in place. So when we do run the sustainable facility, sustainable water facility, again, we'll be able to dispose of our reject water there at South County Sanitation District. The $1 million that was referred to was completely emptying the impoundment basin right now and hauling it to South County Sanitation. Update on the LHMP, we just talked about that. We have sent a letter, update on the licensing of both the Santa Rosa and San Simeon permits with the State Water Resources Control Board. We have submitted a letter to the State Water Resources Control Board in Sacramento asking them to guide us in the process of starting to start licensing of both of our aquifers, and we sent that letter out just a couple days or so ago. On the biomass facility, as you know, we applied for a grant, and I did send this to the board, and I do have a copy of it. Concept proposal for Cal Fire Urban and Community Forest greenhouse gas reduction funds. The grant that we applied for, unfortunately, the concept paper was not selected to move forward, but I'll be working with the Fire Safe Focus Group and Dan Turner. And there are other grants available, and Dan plans on applying for those grants. Update on the notice of violations regarding the Regional Water Quality Control Board. As President Rice indicated, we are in daily correspondence with the Regional Water Quality Control Board. We're waiting to hear back from them on those notices of violation. We're also waiting to hear back from them on how we are going to lower that impoundment basin down to permitted levels. Our anticipated cost to bring it down to within permit levels right now and disposing of it at the wastewater treatment plant, it looks like our most viable option. That's the alternative that we would like to be able to do, and that ultimately is up to the Regional Water Quality Control Board. Once they make that decision, then we can move forward with bringing that basin down to an acceptable limit, which is about 11 inches from where it is now, and then we'll let Mother Nature do the rest and just let it evaporate during the warmest part of the year for the spring and the summertime, if that's acceptable to them. All of the reports that were indicated in the first NOV have been turned in on time, and the largest two reports we have are annual reports for the Sustainable Water Facility and the Impoundment Basin. Those are due April 15th. And we anticipate having both those reports into them before those dates. We're also transitioning away from using CDM Smith to generate the reports, and we feel confident within the next couple months that staff will be able to do those reports and take complete ownership of those. We're working on the budget for fiscal year 2017-2018. We're working closely with the budget committee and working with the department managers. I've adopted a concept this year, and that's a zero-based budget concept, and I've The Finance Committee or the Budget Committee is in support of that, at least at to this point in time. But a zero-based budget is to match revenues with expenditures and to make sure also that every line item is justifiable. In other words, why do we need to spend that money in a particular item? So the draft budget sheets that we've circulated to the department managers, in the projections for next fiscal year, they all have zeros. And so they're going to be working with me and the Budget Committee and Patrick, and we're going to try, to the best of our ability, have a zero-based budget for this year. Dean Flores is working on two particular things right now for us. That is with the Board of Equalization regarding getting back the sales tax portion of the sustainable water facility for the components that were purchased. There was a conference call this morning with Dean and the finance manager, and it was determined that the Board of Equalization is going to come down to the CCSD and do an audit of our agreement with CDM Smith and all the components, and we'll see where it goes after that. But at least we got them, Dean, Senator Flores got them to come down and work with us, and so that door is still open. We're hopefully going to secure those funds into the future. Also, our 5% retention for the sustainable water facility, we've gone jumped through all the hoops on that and gone over all the hurdles, and Senator Flores is working on trying to expedite that over $200,000 getting back to us. It's usually a 45 to 60 day process. What I will be recommending to the board is to, when Senator Flores's contract comes up in June, that we broaden the scope, not to include any more money, but to broaden the scope of his original contract, because he's involved in helping us on so many different fronts regarding tree mortality, Board of Equalizations, State Water Resources Control Board, Coastal Commission. So he's covering a lot of areas. With that, I have a brief PowerPoint presentation I want to show just for the wastewater treatment plant. And I wanted to thank Director Farmer and Director Berenger, the ad hoc committee for the infrastructure. They have their work cut out for them. We have another meeting tentatively scheduled, but we may have to reschedule that. We met with the infrastructure ad hoc committee down at the wastewater treatment plant. And one of the things that we went over was our capital improvement list for the wastewater side. We've completely revised this capital improvement list. It shows everything that needs to be done in the wastewater treatment plant and the infrastructure going out to 2024. I was going through it today again and refining some of the things and sharpening our pencils and things like that. But at least it sets a roadmap for what will need to be replaced into the future at the plant. What we'll do, and this includes lift stations and the collection system, and what we'll do next is go into the water side and update the capital improvement list for the water side. So first slide, please, if you don't mind. I don't have a clicker. Anybody got a clicker? He's back there working. You got a clicker? Okay, but anyway, what I wanted to, when we toured the wastewater facility, I've been here a little over 6 years, and I had to say it looked cleaner than I've ever seen it look before, and they're doing a great job down there. There still is quite a bit of work that needs to be done. So this is just a fraction of what's been accomplished down there. But we had some trouble over the years with deers getting in to the wastewater treatment plant. We had to cut that hole. You can go back if you want. We had to cut all those trees off the hill there and clean that entire area up to determine where the hole was in the fence. So we've replaced a good portion of that fence, and we're not getting deers into the wastewater treatment plant anymore. The next one. The generator block heater was replaced and serviced, and all the above ground generators. Is there a picture there? Hopefully there's a picture. No picture. Okay. So that's the generator. If you look at this, if you look at the capital improvement list, one of the things that does need to be replaced is the generator at the wastewater treatment plant. It's a very old generator, and we want to be able to go with natural gas. But the block heater has been replaced, and this has all been done in the last couple months or so. So next slide. VFD means variable frequency drives on both the effluent pumps. That they are now programmed to handle flow direct from the clarifiers. What that means is there's no surges anymore. It's a variable speed drive, it's sort of like an accelerator in a car. It distributes the amount of water going out to the percolation ponds in an even and consistent manner. So those are the variable frequency drives have been replaced for the clarifiers. Go ahead. The bypass valve, which is the main valve coming into the plant, has been replaced, and the plumbing is now ready for it says rag removal. I would have picked a different word. Sorry about that. It means that it's ready to have the influent bar screen installed. The influent bar screen will be here next week. It's shipping right now. Then we'll get the platform built, and we'll get that in place. Next slide. Wireless communications has been installed at the influent station. The grit chamber has been equipped with a drain. We are able to drain and clean it out. We've replaced one pump motor packing and belts on both pumps. With the FRM staff, we were able to jet the lines from the grit chamber to the aeration basins. This required us to bypass to the front of the plant, so they bypassed all that. Next slide. The old meter was not recording the flow at all, and it's now programmed for 1,100 gallons a minute. That was the old panel on the left-hand side. A new influent meter has been installed. It now records up to 1,800 gallons per minute. Effluent pump one has a new discharge along with being rebuilt. Both pumps have new 95% efficient motors installed. The old Miltronics level control along with the rusted control panel has been replaced with the transducer and a small junction box. So if you look on the left, that was what was there before, all rusted out and everything. We went with state-of-the-art, and that little box is the same thing. That concrete base on the right-hand side is where that cabinet sat before. And so now it has Miltronics, and it's all cleaned up and safe and updated. So we're making progress. Next slide. The ponds have been emptied and cleaned out. These ponds were instrumental during the heavy rains. We have over a 1 million gallon capacity in these ponds, and when we get heavy flows and the plant can't handle it, we divert the effluent leaving the plant into these ponds, and then we slowly pump it over to the perk ponds. The rotator assembly was replaced in the pump that used to send sludge from the south tank to the north tank. You could hear this rotating assembly from anywhere in the plant screaming, so now it's been replaced, that pump right there. We now have replacement motors in stock for all the motors on the screw press, which is our belt press. The Allen Bradley controls for the new screw press have been backed up with variable frequency drives, and they've been replaced. The extension for the discharge installed on the screw pump to allow the filling of the trailers, that's been installed, and the trailers now pick up when full. The trailers rented is $1,200 per month, and no more stockpiling of biosolids on the plant. So the digesters for years weren't functioning properly. They're working now. We're processing biosolids every day. We have a trailer there. We fill the trailer up, and then we haul it off. We don't stockpile it, and we don't process biosolids once a year like we used to. So the digesters are completely emptied and cleaned out, and they're running the way they're supposed to be running now. Compliment to John. Handrails on the digesters have been replaced. The wastewater department has been building handrails in the time allowed. So John's been building these. We definitely need to get somebody to build them for us. But we're doing it at a fraction of the cost. So one handrail, a couple of them have been replaced, and John's in the process of building another one. But he got an old welder that wasn't working, and he got it up and running. And so we're slowly going to start, we are starting to replace the digester handrails, which was a real safety issue. And we're doing that in-house. If you remember, we got $70,000, $80,000 quoted
We can do it in-house as long as we can have the time to do it and the staff to do it. We can do it for considerably less than that. And the product is just absolutely fantastic. So I'll go ahead. The recirculation pumps on the aeration basins have been hard-lined in. A lot of this is technical stuff, but the David Crane has been installed near the return-activated sludge and waste-activated sludge pumps. That's a crane that allows the guys to take the pumps out when they need it. The handrails on both the aeration basins and the clarifiers have been painted with a 25-year epoxy. All those handrails on the plant were made out of fiberglass, and when you walked up there and you held the handrail, you got fiberglass all on your hand, and it was just a royal pain. So they went back and painted all that, and stairs and supports have been painted. Reverse activated sludge flow meter has been replaced, and the second flow meter has been installed soon. Both are return activated sludge and waste activated sludge are now controlled by SCADA. Waste pump 2 has been replaced along with the variable frequency drive. So next slide. The blower number 4 has been installed and the bearings on the other two blowers have been replaced. The alarms are also been connected to SCADA. We're going to meet with the infrastructure committee is going to meet with the representative from the county who did our energy audit. There was a comprehensive energy audit done of our wastewater treatment plant, and there's some opportunities out there, and they have money. It's just a matter of coordinating with them and getting more efficient motors put in. And what you would do is you would fund the capital cost of replacing these older motors with new motors, and you would fund it by the reduction in your energy cost. So there would be no money to the district. Your electrical cost would go down, and by that reduction, you would take that money and apply it towards the purchase of new equipment. I think that's it. So I know it's a lot of information in my report, and I know there's probably some questions, but if there's anything I can answer for you, I'd be more than happy to.
Okay, thank you. I've got a couple of public comments, and then we'll, unless there's questions first from the board, otherwise we'll do public comment and bring it back to the board. All right. Crosby Swartz. I think that's the only one I have on this item.
Madam President, members of the board, and members of staff. At the last meeting, I made the suggestion that the cost for lowering the water level in the evaporation pond should be estimated and included as a budget amendment. Our general managers mentioned the topic, but I didn't hear an estimate of the cost. I would encourage you to get that cost estimate and include it as a budget amendment. Thank you.
Madam President, we did some calculations, and if the Regional Water Quality Control Board blesses our ability to rent a truck and haul it to the wastewater treatment plant, which we're hoping is our preferred alternative, and that they allow us to do that, we're looking at a month or so process and a total cost of about $27,000. Part of the OES claims that we've turned in includes the cost of that, because we feel that the inundation of the impoundment basin was directly proportional to the flood waters received in that immediate area, and we have included that. So at this point in time, we're holding off on putting it into the budget portion of the mid-year budget, because we have included it as part of the monies that we will be asked to be reimbursed from the state.
I just had a question on that. Have you tried to reach back out to the? I know you've been working with the regional board. Have you called them again to try and like maybe speed up the process? Because I mean, technically, every day that we're above the freeboard limit outside our permit, they could theoretically count that as a violation. And I know we're reporting and letting they know that this is an ongoing and that we're trying to solve it. But maybe we could kind of.
Yeah, they have not indicated, and we are being, you're absolutely correct, we're being absolutely honest with them, and we are in violation, and I cannot speak, nor will I try to speak for the Regional Water Quality Control Board, but they have not indicated to us that an excess of our permitted amount is going to result in additional violations. However, I don't want to go on record as saying that.
The other thing is we had the county come out and look at that road situation out there. I was going to say something, but it slipped my mind. I don't think that's not going to be the case. Oh, I went out to the impoundment basin. I was out there the last couple days, and I know people, I would encourage folks to go out there. We've cleaned the entire area up. The fence line inside and outside has been weed-eated. We had to do an emergency ditch along the perimeter of the impoundment basin. We're also asking for a reimbursement of that cost through OES, and we're going to be installing a permanent solution, a piping system, if you will, and we're moving forward on that. CDM was back out the last week, and they're going to be out here for the remainder of the week, reinstalling the gopher fences at no cost to the district. And so if you drive out there and you look at the sandbag work and you look at the trenching and you look at the gopher fences and you look at the grounds work that's been done, that pond, other than having 11 inches more water in it than it really should have, looks better than it ever has before. So all these things that are directly related to the storm, we have included in our submittal to the county to be reimbursed for through OES. We don't feel that it's was our doing. It was Mother Nature, and hopefully they'll agree and reimburse us for some of our cost out of pocket.
Yeah, and I wasn't asking you to speak for the staff of the Water Board. I mostly was asking you to speak for yourself that we are not just giving them the daily updates, but you're actively talking to them about addressing this, because while that extra freeboard is there, so if we have a horrible storm, but it did the job that it was meant to do to have the extra, but we do need to get back in compliance, even if it's, you know, it's a requirement. So it seems to me we need to be actively reaching out to them.
Absolutely.
Also, it
absolutely
seems.
It wouldn't take us that much time-wise to get that down to an acceptable level.
Great.
Trucking it back at 5,000 gallons, it's a doable project that we could do.
The other question I had is, it seems like with all of the deluge of rains and our aquifers being full, that this might not be a bad time to be looking at hydrant flushing and the kinds of maintenance that needs to be done on the hydrants before it gets too late in the rain year, and then we're using the water that we need to rely on for the summer.
Chief and I have been in correspondence with each other, and we're going to, and there's two things we need to do. We need to provide the fire department with a fire hydrant flow meter, so when they test the hydrants, we can calculate that into our unaccounted for water, so our unaccounted for water doesn't jump up. The second thing is to systematically work with neighborhoods and notifying them that there may be some water quality issues, sediment and things like that, and so that we are flushing hydrants. But we, both Chief and myself, we want to get on this. We have 365 fire hydrants, and I don't want to speak for Chief, but we want to start flushing hydrants. I think it's something that needs to be done.
Great. Thank you. Other board members, comments?
I have a few.
Okay.
First off, I appreciate the slide presentation of all the improvements that have taken place at the wastewater facility. John Alchin is doing an excellent job out there, probably far beyond what we had, beyond expectations. I think my main concern is with regard to, as you were pointing out, with regard to the capital improvements program, with regard to the wastewater facility. And I'm noticing here, and I wish that Patrick, our finance manager, were here so I could ask him these questions. But I notice here on page 27 and then 28 and 29, basically 27 and 28, excuse me, 26, 27, and 28, our financial audit at the end of June of 2016, cash on hand, was roughly $4.8 million. Cash on hand at the end of February of this year, $3.3 million cash on hand at the end of this fiscal year, June 30th, 2017, just barely $2 million. I'm bringing this up because, like I say, I appreciate the improvements that have been taking place, but as you pointed out with the capital improvements program, over the next 6-7 years, the cost of upgrading the facility is just under $8 million in money today. I think this is a major concern that the ratepayers of this community should know about, that we are, with each passing month, with each passing report period, we have less money, especially with regard to wastewater. Wastewater fund is actually in the red now, or in the brown, as it may be. So I'm concerned about that. I'd also like to ask about the lift station over by Tin City, and of course we had some problems with that because of the flooding. And I see that it's going to cost approximately $250,000 to $300,000 for that. And it would be good to know if we were going to be applying for some grant funding for that. I have more things, but you, if you would respond to those initially there.
I think the board knows my position on the infrastructure and my concerns related to the repairs that need to be done. I think we're doing what needs to be done by putting a detailed capital improvement list together and revising it. And but these are policy decisions that we're going to have to discuss as general manager to board, and I'm going to need some direction. I'm going to make some recommendations. But these are conversations that are going to have to take place, and there's going to have to be some decisions made regarding expenditures for the district and those costs and how we're going to pay for them and things like that. I absolutely agree with your observations regarding where we are with cash on hand, where the wastewater department is, and the need to address a lot of the issues that are before us. So I think that we're going to be able to have those conversations during the budget process and come to a consensus on how we want to move forward in addressing some of these things. The lift station in the money that we applied for the state, we attribute the lift station is still functioning, but if you've gone up Burton by Tim City right there, there was a landslide area right there. If you're driving up Burton, not on the right hand side, it would be on the left hand side by the walking trail right there. There was an area that it kind of went down the hill. So we've asked for money from OES. We've got some estimates on relocating that lift station. Now, when I say relocate the lift station, it would be to the southeast corner of our existing property, and it wouldn't be relocating the lift station to an entirely different area. It would still service Tin City, but it would take it out of that slide area, if you will. So we have included that $250,000 amount in the paperwork that we filed with the state. So,
if I might just quickly follow up on that, I did notice that landslide wasn't marked on the LHMP for anything, and I didn't notice that lift station. It seems like that might have been left off inadvertently, since it's been now affected by a landslide.
Well, the LHMP, Bob Newman is reluctant to use the word landslides in this immediate area because he categorizes them as something else, which is smaller in nature. A landslide usually is something of great magnitude, something that happened on like the 41 or something like that. That was a landslide. He categorizes them, but he does identify them as the risk of being moderate, if I remember correctly within the document, as being something else. But it is what it is, and it slid
down.
That's
a huge piece of our infrastructure, though, that
absolutely
now has been affected by an act of God.
Yeah.
And, you know, the impoundment basin was another, and we've asked for funding and helping with that, too. That was another infrastructure component, if you will, that's been impacted by the storms.
Thank you.
So to answer Mr. Director Farmer's question, you know, I've been aware of the needs versus the revenue since I've been on board, and I'm confident that, you know, working with the board and working with the infrastructure committee and making some recommendations and coming up with a plan, identifying what we need, what we have to do right away, what we can defer, how we're going to pay for it, can all be part of the conversation that we need to have.
Thank you. Director Farmer, did you have other questions?
I do. Thank you. On page 13, I'm just backing up a little bit. Like I said, I appreciate the slides and some of the information we're getting. But I'm noticing here that on Tuesday, February 21st, you had a conference call with CDM Smith to discuss the NOVs, the facility on the hill, the impoundment basin, and the reports to a regional water quality control board. And then you had another conference call with Michael Baker International regarding the EIR for the facility on the hill here, as well as the Water Supply Ad Hoc Committee. They were also present. So since we pay these people a sufficient amount of money and sometime people in the community question the competence and other agencies questioning the competence of these folks, CDM Smith and Michael Baker International, it would be nice to know what was, let's say, discussed and determined in these conference calls, so maybe next time that can happen?
I do a brief explanation now. So when we had the meeting with Regional Water Quality Control Board on February 1st, my conversations with CDM Smith and have been since that point is what can we do to make sure the reports are in on time? And I think that was my highest priority for them. And so when we do talk to CDM Smith, those are some of the things that we talked to them about. We also had conversations regarding the gopher fence. One of the deficiencies not in this NOV, but that the Regional Water Quality Control Board has identified is that when that gopher fence was installed, it was done. There was parts of it that had rolled up internally, and it wasn't serving its purpose. So with Regional Water Quality, with CDM Smith, we asked them to come back and to repair that at no additional cost to the district, and they're going to do that. Another conversation we had with CDM Smith was regarding fail-safe systems for the chlorination system. In other words, if you went back several months on one of the NOVs, it had indicated that there was violations as it related to the CT, which is a chlorine contact time. And my question was, well, why didn't the system shut down? Why didn't it alarm? And to find out, we didn't have those components incorporated into the system. It wasn't part of the original specifications. Again, CDM Smith is going to come out and take care of those at no additional cost to the district. With regards to the Michael Baker International, those are standing meetings that we have every 2 weeks to make sure that the EIR process is moving forward, and that the matrix that was assigned to staff make sure those response to public comment letters are being addressed. We are on a timeline. We want to get the EIR, an administrative draft, done as soon as we possibly can. One of the other things we talked to Michael Baker International about is the adaptive management plan. We talked to Michael Baker International about the right of entry with state parks, and we strategize on how all those things are going to be incorporated into the administrative draft of the EIR. So I'd be more than happy to do a better job in summarizing those conversations and what we're talking to them about. But with CDM Smith, it's making sure that we're getting these reports in on time. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing. And with Michael Baker International, making sure we get this EIR done and get it to an administrative review and get it certified by this board in the next couple months.
Can I make one more comment, please? Oh, by the way, when you were talking about landslide, I don't know why the first thing that pops into my mind is Fleetwood Mac, but that's just me. I have one other landslide. So I'm noticing here on page 93, you know, I don't know if you can elucidate me, or if that's the right word to use, on this item for L.N. Curtis and Sons on page 93, $11,904.75 for extreme gold jackets and gold pants. I'm just wondering, I'm sure there's a real need for this. I'm just wondering what it is.
I would venture to say that their fire departments, their turnout gear, I never referred to them as gold, though, but I think that's the company name, or maybe Chief can help me on that.
Okay.
Director Farmer, I know with the additional staff, I know that they have a shelf life. I know that that shelf life had been extended because of our finances. But Chief, am I right? Are they turnout gear? Okay.
Director, all right, Farmer, I appreciate it. Chief, I wasn't casting any aspersions. Oh, that just, you know, it just kind of jumped out at me, and I had no idea what they were. So thank you so much.
Is that all?
I don't think I want to take up any more time. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Director Farmer.
Thank you, Director Farmer. All right. Now, we do have some board committee reports, but I'd like them to be brief. And I just want to say that I'm based on what the general manager has talked about with the infrastructure committee, and knowing how many other things the budget committee is going to be looking at, it would be really helpful that if the infrastructure committee does look into kind of the details of those budgets, the water and the wastewater budgets, so that the board has a good handle on it, because it is a big budget, and so if we can kind of split it up by committee kind of in that way, it would be helpful to have some options and recommendations to the budget committee or to the full board from the infrastructure committee.
That's agreeable.
Is that okay with the rest of the folks on the board? It might, Director Thompson,
as far as the report, we had something canceled. We're going to be doing something in April 4th, I think.
Rain?
April 3rd is a go.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I don't have any infrastructure ad hoc committee report.
Okay.
Unless Mr. Farmer has.
No. I'm embarrassed to say I forgot every report that I was supposed to bring today because other things were on my mind. My apologies.
I love honesty. That's
Fire ad hoc, I think we talked a little bit about.
Very briefly, Madam President, Director Thompson and I constitute the fire ad hoc committee. We're looking at some alternatives, financing alternatives, to hopefully retain the fire-safe firefighters that we've hired beyond the grant period, which runs out in, if my recollection is correct, March of next year. So we'll be bringing back recommendations to the board.
Wonderful. Thank you. Director Thompson?
And not exactly the ad hoc committee, but just wanted to make a brief comment about the Fire Safe Focus Group that Supervisor Bianchi modestly said she moderated. I think it's more a matter she's the heart and soul of the group. But I understand that the group did receive a $500 grant to fund the FireWise Wildfire Awareness Day on May 6th. And so Bruce Fosdyke wrote that grant, and so we'll be, I guess, determining how that will proceed. And Supervisor, you've been sitting there an awful long time. You want to stand up and say a few words about Fire Safe Focus? No? Yeah. Well, okay. But thank you very much for leading that group.
Indeed, I second that.
Director Rice, I third that. And not only is it a great moderated group, by just the fact that they exist and the things that they're doing is going to make every resident be able to obtain insurance at, you know, more reasonable rates. And the focus that we have on it is recognized. And that particular grant was from an insurance company. And I think that you know, that bodes well for the hard work that they're doing. It's going to affect every citizen in this community.
Thank you, Director Berenger. Finance Committee report, we're getting together with the Finance Director and General Manager to look over, again, the mid-year budget amendments that had been brought forward and then recommended to go back to the committee. So we'll be looking at that next week, week after next. And then we'll be starting, as General Manager Gruber related, we'll be starting on the 17-18 budget following that, I think later in that same week. Other than that, I don't have anything specific unless I've forgotten something, Director Sanders.
No, I think that's it.
Okay, thank you. Then that, in, did we have any other committee reports or liaison reports? All right, then we are two items left, the consent agenda and item 7B, but first...
All right.
Everybody needs to stand up just for 1 minute. We're not taking a break, but please stand up. And if you need, I won't make you do the hokey pokey, but you have to stand up.
Stand up after
the bathroom. Fair enough.
Good.
Thank you. Getting your blood moving is a good thing.
With that, Madam President, may I move that we approve the consent agenda.
I have one item to pull off of consent, and I had a question on the expenditure report, or comment on the expenditure
I thought
report.
We did the agenda review earlier, but whatever pleases the president, I suppose.
So I'd like to pull item 6C and the expenditure report. I just wanted to make a comment on the expenditure report really quick. I would like to thank Patrick for reformatting it so it's not as hard to read and small, and it also has the expense account numbers on there. Makes it a lot easier to track where things are coming from and going to, and I very much appreciate that. Please take that comment back with you.
We have a couple other ideas. We have a couple other ideas that we'd like to run by the Budget Committee, too, that may make it even further easier to understand, but some other modifications that may just make it just a lot easier for everybody. So we're almost there with it, but we'll talk to that about the Budget Committee with that.
Thank you very much. All right, consent agenda.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Second the motion.
Item A and B, because C is pulled.
If that's the pleasure of the president, yes. I'll accept that as a move that A and B is approved on the consent agenda.
Agreed with
the second?
Acceptable
to the second.
Thank you very much. Let's have a roll call, please, on item consent agenda A and B.
Director Baer.
Aye.
Director Baer.
Aye.
Vice President Sanders.
Yes.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Thompson?
Aye.
President Rice?
Aye. Thank you. Item 6C.
Item 6C, consideration of approval of amendment to covenant and agreement restricting use of secondary unit at 4-8. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Okay, 6C. Can you hear me now? Consideration of approval of amendment to covenant agreement restriction use of secondary unit at 481 Plymouth Street. We do have representation here regarding this matter, and I'm going to turn this over to District Counsel Tim Carmel to update the board on the matter before you.
Thank you, Madam President. I don't have an elaborate report. This was a request from a property owner whose property was burdened with a restrictive covenant that required the home and a garage unit, a unit over the garage, a second unit, to be owner-occupied. It was recorded back in 2000, I believe. And the request is to modify that that deed restriction to allow essentially the property to be rented. The owner-occupation requirement essentially said the owner's family, was required to occupy it. Now, under this proposed change, the owner occupation requirement would now be called common residence, which is essentially the same renter would have to occupy both the unit itself and the garage unit. That's really the essence of what's being requested here. There's an amendment in your packet that effectuates that change, and I'd be glad to answer any questions with regard to it. Its derivation is somewhat oblique in my mind. I don't know where this came from a sort of a land use perspective. This really doesn't, in my opinion, this really doesn't affect the utility services to the property. But from a land use perspective, the county oftentimes requires restrictive covenants like this for other reasons, for neighborhood reasons. So with that, I'll turn it back and be glad to answer any questions.
Okay. I do have a request to it looks like that we have the folks that are requesting the change are here to answer questions if we have them. Is that correct? John and Becky Newton. Would you like to speak to the item, or just if we have questions? Okay. Director Thompson.
I understand that basically it only has one meter. Is that correct? I mean,
yes.
Yeah. And actually, I'm supportive of this action. I think that it's really a restrictive covenant. I would go so far as to say I wouldn't have any problem with you being able to rent out the upper unit. I think there's lots of folks in town that that could use a place to rent. And so, like, I mean, we are woefully short of rental properties and for low income and other folks. And so, you know, I have absolutely no problem with this as written.
Yeah, I would add to that the support of that, but I tend to think that, again, that is a county ordinance that would restrict it. The CCSD should not be involved in land use issues, and this how it got on the books is problematic. So, but that was my comment.
Madam President, whether it's occupied by the owner, whether it's occupied by a renter, whether the entire property is rented and the renter has a family member living in the other unit, or whether it's rented out, it makes no difference in terms of the amount of water that is being used. I cannot for the life of me understand the utility of having this kind of a restrictive covenant. Like Director Thompson, I'm favorably disposed toward approving the amendment, but I also would like to have a report back at some point by the staff on whether or not these restrictive covenants, just as a matter of policy, ought to be either declared not enforceable or removed from these properties that are burdened.
Madam President, I would actually support Director Sanders' comment, and I would also think that staff should be able to come back with this. I tend to think that with a little investigation, there was an era within the CCSD where I don't know if it was Mr. Montandon or whatever, where these crept in and are, I hope they're not still existing, because we don't, not only do we not have the authority, but they're fairly well, it's not our business. So anyway, I support that, but maybe even make it a ministerial action as opposed to being required to for the board to be considering these.
Director Farmer and then Vice President Sanders.
Yes, I just want to say, as one of the two renters on this board, and Mike and I don't always agree, Director Thompson, pardon me, but I totally concur with everything that he said, and also with Director Sanders. Just having one more opportunity for someone to rent in this community, and especially because I just got the feeling from what I saw here that you folks are, like you said, you love this community. And believe me, that word means a lot. And I wish you all the best. Thank you.
Vice President Sanders.
Madam President, I move the amendment to covenant and agreement restricting use of secondary unit at 481 Plymouth Street.
I would second it with a friendly amendment to also direct staff to see if administratively they can handle these items in-house.
That's acceptable to the maker of the motion.
So the motion is to
approve the amendment to the covenant and agreement and to direct staff to look into other possible situations similar and how we might address them going forward as a policy matter?
Administratively. In other words, this if county council agrees that this could be administratively rather than each individual
being brought to
the board. So it
would be a policy change to the to the way, because otherwise they would come to us every each and every time.
Right.
So,
and I think if Monique could read back what I think I said.
I just want to make sure that the motion is clear and what we're asking for, because this could become a precedent, and I definitely don't want to be, because there's people that have been waiting to build for a very long time that don't have a granny unit that can't use any water. So, I mean, let's hear the motion, please.
Director Sanders moved to approve the Amendment 1 for 481 Plymouth and allow the staff to approve this type of amendment in-house. Director Sanders second, I'm sorry, Berenger seconded the motion.
I didn't say in-house. What I meant is administratively.
To direct staff to bring back a report of a policy change, yes.
To be able
possible,
to handle
an option,
methods,
right, an option
similar,
to change the policy.
Yes, and this would change the policy. Instead of it being a board issue, it would be administratively handled with the concurrence of legal of staff of legal counsel, that it could be handled administratively. So could you kind of read that back again?
I just want to make sure that it's clear, that's all.
Move to approve the Amendment 1 for 481 Plymouth and allow the staff to approve this type of amendment administratively.
Correct.
I thought it was bringing back a report.
No, you wanted to bring, I don't want to
okay.
bring back a report.
Okay, that's good. That's why I wanted the clarification. I want to know what we're voting on. Thank you.
It's acceptable to the maker of the motion.
Okay, thank you.
Can I make a comment?
Yes, please,
after
Director
After seeing
Farmer.
The dysfunction up here at this board, are you sure you still want to move here? It's a joke. It's a joke.
We already own a home. Mm-hmm. This would be a second one.
Roll call?
It would be an investment.
Do you have a roll call?
Call for the question.
Vice President Sanders?
Aye.
Director Berenger?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Thompson?
Aye.
President Rice?
No. All right, let's move on to item 7B. That item passes, the amendment passes 4-1. Item 7B, and then we'll have future agenda items, and then everybody can actually go for a walk, and there's still a little tiny bit of sunlight. Let's see how
Thank
we
you,
do
Madam
here.
President. Item 7B is discussion and consideration of lifting Stage 3 water shortage emergency and imposing Stage 2 water shortage conditions. And I'm going to let District Counsel Tim Carmel present this. He's got a whole sheet over here of notes, so I don't want
to... I hope I don't have to read it. This item's not new. I was requested to bring this back with potentially considering reducing the Stage 3 to a Stage 2. So you probably recall that we didn't utilize the three stages that are in chapter or Article 4 of our municipal code because the modeling upon which it's all premised is stale at this point. So we utilized Water Code Section 350 and 378 to structure this Stage 3. So the term Stage 3 essentially was the most, it's conventionally used as the most severe of the drought restriction conditions, and that's why we named it that. So technically, there is no Stage 2 that we can drop to without some direction. As a result, what I did was I plunked into the middle of the staff report the Stage 2 criteria from our code, which will provide very little help. But again, it just gives you a clue as to what it tries to achieve. So again, there's no requirement that you drop to a Stage 2. If you do decide to lift to Stage 3 and the situation arises, and the situation is that the drought conditions are so severe that we're facing a crisis in that we won't be able to supply water for domestic sanitation and fire protection needs. That's really the basis upon which a stage three is imposed. Once you meet those conditions and can make those findings, you'd be able to again institute a stage three. You'll recall that the SWOOF is linked to, at this point in time, is conditionally linked to stage three. So if you wanted to restart that plant, you'd have to be in a stage three and you'd have to make those findings. Let's see. I think that's probably all I have to. There is one other issue worth noting. Our code contains some very restrictive water waste restrictions on the books now that really mirror most of the restrictions that are included in our stage three. I could probably go over them, and I know, Madam President, you may already have done this. I think there are five that would live, and the rest are already contained on our code. So if you did, in fact, lift the stage three, there are still some very heavy-duty restrictions in place. And the other thing is our code also makes them heavily penalized, depending on how many times you do it. I think a third time results in a $500 fine. So those are already contained on our code. So if you did lift the stage three, you do have a number of very severe restrictions still on your books. And again, I'd be glad to go through the remaining restrictions that are now a part of your stage three if you want me to do that. Essentially, they're restrictions on the use of potable water outside.
More interested about what would go away, frankly.
What would go away?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're talking about outdoor irrigation of landscaping with potable water once a week, watering grass, lawns, ground cover, shrubbery, landscaping in a manner, oh no, that's already in our code. Potable water during 48 hours after measurable rainfall is prohibited. And I think that's actually still included in the state's restrictions, so that would survive as well. Emptying and refilling swimming pools and commercial spas is now prohibited unless it's needed for structural damage. That would go away. And use of potable water in fountains and decorative water features, and that's about it. And again, with regard to the suspension of the penalties and surcharges, that's already in effect. That, I think, expires in June. But again, just to sort of reinforce this, if you lifted the stage three, we'd have to start over again. Those would no longer be on the books. The suspension would be overridden by the lifting of this. So with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Director Berenger.
Yes, I have a question. The governor had certain restrictions in place. I don't think they're entirely lifted. I think the only thing that the governor or the state of California is requiring has to do with outdoor water. outdoor watering. And what is that restriction that the state of California had in place? Is it 2 days a week, or what is it?
I think it's within 48 hours of measurable rainfall, and I think it's also street medians, public street medians. I think that's still on the books. Okay. And I believe that's also a part of our, that's actually number 9 of our restrictions that's in this, but that would live as well because I believe it's so, a Department of Water requirement as well.
So not to make things brief, we're going to have a discussion anyway. I would move that we lift stage, water emergency stage 3, ensuring that we comply with any state-mandated water restrictions that the state of California still has in effect.
Second the motion. With a comment, I'm very sensitive and agree with the comments that Director Thompson made when this was last before the board. As much as anything, a matter of optics, and we certainly don't want to convey the message that we're in the business of wasting water. So I want to emphasize that if this motion passes, there are still, on the books of the CCSD, a number of water conservation and water restriction requirements that can segue into some pretty stiff penalties that the district can impose for violation of them. And we need to emphasize also that we are under a state declaration of emergency. There are certain restrictions imposed by the state which we have to abide by. And I think beyond that, the water conservation efforts of this community speak for itself.
Okay, before we get to you, if nobody has questions for clarification, I do have a public comment on this item. Mrs. Bianchi.
There it goes. No, I just have some general comments. General, not gentle. Remind you, and you all know that, we're still in a drought condition. And although there has been 6 feet of rain at Rocky Butte and over 5 feet at our house, and the hills are really pretty saturated, but not completely. And the rapidity with which the volume of water in the creek went down indicates that the what I refer to as the checking account, your aquifer is full, but your savings account is probably only half full. And you need to keep that in mind. It might not rain next year. You just never know. And if I could ask one fast question, during the general manager's report, Jerry commented on approaching the State Water Resources Control Board with licensing San Simeon Santa Rosa Creek. What is hoped to be achieved by that?
I do think it's a fair question. I just want to make sure you're done with your comment before we, because
no,
I'll have Jerry. Okay. Thank you very much for your input. Jerry, do you want to?
Licensing process would codify the amount of water that we would be able to withdraw once and for all from both the aquifers.
Thank you.
Are you?
Does that answer the question? Vice President Sanders, did you want to?
Yeah. Surely we can provide you with a copy of the letter that went to the State Water Resources Control Board. I think you'd be surprised, pleasantly so, at the reduction in the volume of water that we'd be allowed to extract.
Thank you very much. That answers my question, and I'm going home.
Okay.
Thank you for sticking around. All right, let's bring it back to the board on the discussion and consideration of lifting the Stage 3 water shortage emergency. Other comments from directors?
Yeah, just one comment,
yes.
And it sort of dovetails with what Shirley Bianchi had to say. It's not so much how much it rains, it's when it rains. So in order to get through the dry season, it's important that the wells be full late April into May. So that's point number one. Point number two is the levels of the aquifers degenerate, if we're caught in another situation where we have a potential water shortage, with careful monitoring, we can get a Stage 3 reinstituted on practically a moment's notice.
Director Farmer?
I think I mentioned just in the past with regard to perception and how things people perceive things to be, and the fact that we've suspended the surcharges and penalties. If I'm not mistaken, you know, water use has increased because I think people are feeling more comfortable that the drought situation is over. And so, like I say, residents are increasing their water usage. And, you know, my main concern is because, to me, what has happened in the past to have gotten us to this point where we're at now with regard to the water facility that we have, we've either gone from, you know, extreme fear, oh, we might run out of water, to the problem's over, we can go back to the way things used to be in the old days. And neither of those, as far as I'm concerned, are correct. I think it's important to let the good folks of this community, who obviously a couple of years ago really stepped up to the plate and conserved, to let them know that and I've mentioned this before, we are in the 21st century, and anticipating water to be, rainfall to be between 20 and 25 inches, which is what it was like when I moved here 30 years ago, you pretty much expected that every year, maybe a slight drop or a big increase. Now it's somewhere between 11 and 36 inches, and we don't know what's going to happen from one year to the next. So if nothing else, we as residents of this beautiful town that we live in need to remain consistent and responsible in our water usage, no matter how much or how little rain is coming from the sky. And as a member of this board and a representative of this board, but a member of this community and a representative of the people that voted for me, I just want to remind people of that reality that we are in now, that we need to remain consistent in being as, how could I say, as responsible in our water uses as possible. And that's pretty much what I have to say. Thank you.
Director Thompson.
Yes, thank you. Having been on this board when we went through this process with the emergency water system, I can tell you that the fear of running out of water was a very real fear, and that at that time doing nothing was not an option. I mean, our monitoring well was under 3 feet. We couldn't use Santa Rosa Creek. The whole state was in a 5-year drought, and so my position at that time was that doing nothing was not an option. And I think we did what needed to be done, and it was the correct decision. With respect to dropping to stage 3, I have a question, Mr. Gruber. We don't anticipate having to turn on the sustainable water system this year for running a test or for using the system for any purpose other than if we should need to use it. Is that what your position is?
That is correct.
At the last meeting, I did oppose lifting the stage 3 because of that very real issue. I thought of getting out in front of the state on this issue. And as long as going to a stage 2 does not put us under what the state is requiring and is consistent with the state's issue on the drought, then I would support the motion.
Director
for
Barringer.
Clarification, by the way, I agree with Director Farmer completely. We are in a different era, and if you go back to 1991, where we used, everybody was afraid of that, that's 26 years ago. We're using 10% less than we did in 1991, and only more than 40% less than we've ever used in the last several years. So, but that might need to be remain completed. And just for clarification from Mr. Thompson, the motion was to lift stage 3 and not go to a stage 2, just lift stage 3. And that was the second also.
So I have one specific concern, which is that we declared this emergency and under this emergency built the emergency water supply system, and that we are now working on the EIR to have a permanent facility for sustainable in drought years. We still have a 5% retention with the state. Might lifting this stage 3 at this point cause any consternation at the state before they give us the money that we're waiting for the project that they gave us the money to build because we're in an emergency and they're still under a drought declaration? Because Jerry Brown has not lifted that. Governor Brown has not lifted that state of emergency yet, and I think that he's not thinking he's going to until the fall.
No, I don't see that
being an issue,
but I can double check with Senator Flores. But I don't necessarily see a nexus between the two. We've not run that facility under a stage 3 condition for a longer period of time than we've run it, and it hasn't been brought to our attention regarding the retention
when it's not in operation. So I don't see a necessary nexus between the two.
Madam President, I don't believe there's any term or condition of the grant itself which would govern this situation that requires us to be in a stage three. So that would be the concern, but okay. That doesn't exist.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful. And I'm assuming that the state is being provided with all of the reports and numbers of water use that we're being required, like every water agency is being required to submit to them. I'm kind of disappointed there aren't some numbers. I have to go back to the general manager's report to look for those numbers, and it would have been nice to have that data. You know me. They should call me data. Because it would be really nice to have had that as an extra bolster to the clearly wet weather, and for that reason, I am going to oppose it. But I'm hearing the count up here, and I think we should take a vote unless somebody else has a comment to make.
I have a comment,
Vice President Sanders.
I'm going to withdraw my second. And if it's acceptable to the maker of the motion, I'd second a motion that would include just going to stage two.
Well, county or district council did say that stage two has little meaning, and I've always been very straightforward with people that says that you got to tell the truth, and to introduce a meaningless stage, if it makes the board feel more comfortable, I tend to think it's going to be an easier slippery slope to go from a 2 to a 3, and I think that the
So is that a no on the amendment?
I don't see the value of a stage two.
Let me explain where I'm coming from. I mean, I just made the comment that it's not how much it rains, it's when it rains. We are not yet at the point where we can make a determination that the aquifers are going to be full enough to take us all the way through the dry season. I would feel much more comfortable lifting the stage three entirely without going to stage two first if we were in May and we had well readings that told us that the aquifers were at the maximum amount. What I'm willing to do, if the board would agree, is to revisit the issue going from stage two to having no water emergency declared in May, after the wells are red.
Okay. The problem,
so it'll be a two-step process. Go to stage two today and then completely eliminate the water emergency declaration in May.
Okay. I understand your comments, Mr. Sanders, and the reason I have several problems with it, probably most importantly, is it keeps into effect some of these things like commercial uses, how much they use in the last 12 months, household size, 3 units each, monitoring, those types of things that really are not applicable now. If you read what a stage two is, and I did, it has things in place like the implementation criteria. One permanent residence gets 3 units. Each of the permanent residents gets 3. That kind of stuff.
Right.
I'd like to get away from that.
It also says the general manager may, in his or her discretion, grant exceptions to the terms of this chapter not already provided for if he or she determines that, and then it goes on to.
And what I heard was the second withdrawal from the motion. If there's not another second, then that motion would die and we could make another one.
I will accept the motion given that the general manager and in the monthly bills, we don't re-implement the commercial uses amounts and the residential uses amounts because they are no longer applicable.
So. Mr. Carmel.
Perhaps if we're going to be going to the stage two that's in our code, and I presume that's what we're doing, we can waive surcharges that are imposed in that chapter, because I think that gets you to the same point. Then there's no specific allotment because you'd be able to exceed it without penalty, if that helps at all.
Okay, I would.
So let's kind of
waive
start back at
anyway.
The.
Okay, so I
let's
move,
start back
I
at the. Yeah, let's be specific.
We waive the stage three. We follow the recommended action. We'll lift the stage three water emergency and impose a stage two water shortage condition, and waive penalties as per the chapter. What?
4.12B.
4.12B.
I'll second the motion with the comment that we can always fall back on the water waste provisions in our municipal code if there's a gross waste of water going on.
Agreed.
I have a question. Is this, we would bring this back, you would feel better bringing it back in May or June to then look at whether we lift the shortage emergency condition altogether?
Yeah, that's just a matter of administrative.
So that would be direction to staff, but not included in the motion? Is that
right.
Okay?
Not in the motion, but I would agree direction to staff.
Mr. Gruber, did you hear the direction to staff to bring it back May, June? When we kind of know better how late the rain is. Thank you very much. So the motion is to go from a stage three emergency to the stage two that is on our books without surcharges, without the surcharge.
Provisions. Correct.
All right. Is there any other comments or questions, Director Thompson?
Just that I'm happy to see that the new motion is in place, because I think it pays to keep a cautionary view of the whole situation, and with that, I will support it.
Okay.
Thank you. Anybody else have any comments? Otherwise, we're going to vote. Director Farmer, did you have a comment?
I realize that we're not an enforcement agency, and we don't want to punish people. However, the lifting of surcharges and penalties, I just don't think is a wise idea. If people are not responsible enough with their water usage and feel like they can use any amount of water that they want because they can afford it, then they should be obligated to pay a penalty for doing that. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Farmer. I think we're ready for the question, yes?
Director Berenger?
Aye.
Vice President Sanders?
Yes.
Director Farmer?
No.
Director Thompson?
Aye.
President Rice?
No. Thank you. That vote passes 3-2. We are on to future agenda items. Is there anybody on the board that would like to add an agenda item for April or May? I've got my... I would like to see how the board feels about having the executive committee put together a pretty simple correspondence policy and relating to emails with the new ruling that came down relating to emails of board members. If that's okay with the board, that we would bring that back. Seems like you're maybe busy this month. We bring it back in May. Would that work for you, Vice President Sanders, or would you rather do it in April?
Either one is fine.
Okay. So a correspondence and email policies, the executive committee will look at that, and we will bring it back for April or May. That gives us, because we've got the budget things going on too, so I don't want to, and our staff is overworked and fortunately... working. All right. So if there's, yes, Vice President Sanders. Yes.
I had a discussion with a senior member of the county staff, and one of the county supervisors day before yesterday. The issue has to do with the county's assumption of the groundwater management responsibility for the six water basins that need to be managed in the San Luis Obispo County area. I'm concerned about the county stepping in and managing the Paso Robles water basin. It's going to cost the county several million dollars of general fund money. By spending that money out of the general fund, that could deprive this community of money that might otherwise be available. And it's particularly important given that general fund money is completely discretionary. My view is that the residents of Paso Robles, not the city necessarily, but the Paso Robles water basin, ought to be paying for the management of their own water basin, just like our ratepayers pay for the management of our two basins. If it was completely up to me, I would have on the agenda for consideration by the board in April a statement to that effect. But I don't know how the other board members feel.
I definitely feel that that would be the case. And
Why don't you make that motion and then we can vote on it to put it.
I so move.
I'd second it. I would. There's some discussion on that, though. I do believe that the Board of Supervisors has rescinded their initial vote, and they're going to readdress it on April 4th, which is before our next meeting. And I don't know. You can never predict what someone might do, but not only would we, we should take a position on it, regardless of whether something is decided on April 4th or not.
Director Sanders, you seem to be more well-versed in this. Maybe do we need to be perhaps calling a special meeting to have a position, or would it be okay once we're past
the... If the board members are willing, I would certainly agree to having a special meeting. Sure.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to have a position letter that we would consider at a special meeting to in protest, that's not quite the right word.
It would just be in opposition to
in opposition
the expenditure
to okay.
of county general fund money for the purpose of managing the Paso Robles water basin.
That is a very clear. Thank you very much. Is there questions on that, Director Thompson?
Just from a standpoint, that really is the only issue that impacts us. We're not pulled into any of the other.
No, that's the only issue, Director Thompson.
Could we perhaps also have some discussion or indication of what the potential impact would be to us if they did use these funds? I don't know if we could really
It's quantifiable to a fairly well.
Okay.
We can.
Other questions? Director
Farmer? I just want to make the comment. I don't know if we necessarily need a special meeting to act upon this, but I'm totally in support of
well, it's not on today's agenda, so we have to agendize it. Yeah, we can't take action today.
I understand
today.
That.
Yeah.
As a comment, if we could make a special meeting, I don't know if we can do it by a telephone or I don't think.
No, I think we have to have a public meeting.
But if we can find staff to find five of us or four of us.
We can.
Three of us.
How about this? We have a motion on the floor. Let's vote on the motion, and we can arrange the special meeting as we need.
Okay.
Is that okay, sure. Mr. Carmel? Thank you. I want to make sure we're all within the order. So we have a motion and a second. Let's have a roll call vote, please. The motion is, as Director Sanders so clearly stated. Thank you.
Vice President Sanders?
Yes.
Director Berenger?
Yes.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Thompson?
Aye.
President Rice?
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much for bringing that issue forward. I appreciate that, Vice President Sanders. We are... adjourned.